knowledge fight. And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a fiction caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Is there a specific jingle you remember from your childhood?
One that pops out in your mind right away? O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, really?
That kind of, yeah, that's the
first. Is that the jingle for that?
Yeah, O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly.
That business has my favorite origin story. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Yeah.
It's just a divorce gone bad, and she made her own business to spite.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think it's the guy who...
You know the lore of O'Reilly?
They owned AutoZone, or the guy who created AutoZone. Yeah, get in the zone with AutoZone. Yeah. And then they got divorced, and she was like, I fucking hate that guy. And she just made O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I feel really...
I'm fairly certain that's the...
I hope you're not telling tales out of school.
Apocrypha? Yeah. It could be. I could be wrong, but I remember that one.
I wish it was more of a local thing, but I honestly also, I realized that I had sort of placed O'Reilly Auto Parts in my brain as like a local Columbia business, not realizing it's a national chain.
It sounds more like it could be than AutoZone, you know, like, yeah. O'Reilly sounds like it could be like, oh, I know O'Reilly, he lives down the block.
That's the one that sticks out most to me in my mind, but I'm sure there are others, and maybe one will come to me by the time we finish this episode, and if so, I'll sing it.
Well, I just turned and looked over, and you've got goldfish on the table, and I was like, got goldfishes. So
I don't remember that one?
No. Oh, man.
My parents would mostly only let us watch PBS growing up, so I didn't have a lot of commercials in my early days.
Try kale. Kale's good. We're from PBS.
I don't even think they would allow that. But this is a podcast where I don't know much about jingles, but I do know quite a bit about Alex Jones.
And I know quite a bit about the former and none about the latter.
So, Jordan, today we are back in the past. We are going to be going over April 18th, 2013.
All right.
Continuing our larger coverage of Alex's response to Sandy Hook and his coverage afterwards in the subchapter of the Boston bombing.
This investigation has really gotten out of hand.
I think it's gotten out of hand, but one of the things that I'm starting to realize is that maybe what we were looking for was the wrong thing.
Mm.
You know, what we embarked on was trying to figure out when Alex changes his tune about Sandy Hook, but in the process, I think the larger story is the Boston bombing.
Right.
I think that broke his mind.
I think you might be right.
And I think that we've accidentally stumbled onto pretty solid evidence that this is a major turning point in his career.
Yeah.
He believes, like we talked about on our last episode, that he has completely outflanked the globalists.
Of course he does.
And he just continues to lose it. And we're going to go through a good bit of that on today's episode.
Yeah.
Things get wild. But before we get to that, we got to give a shout out to some folks who've signed up and are supporting the show. So first of all, Brett, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Brett. Next. You did said Brit. You were trying to do a Flight of the Conchords.
I thought of it, but I didn't mean to say it. Sorry.
Brit. Colin, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
Next. You are now a policy wonk. You are now a policy wonk.
All right.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
You are now a policy wonk.
Next. Carl, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Carl.
Next, Liz. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Next, Joel. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Joel.
If that's you, Skousen, get out of here. Get the fuck out of here, Skousen.
Or Hodgson. That would be better than Skousen.
In which case, get the back fuck in here, Hodgsons. You're a big fan of, I'm a big fan of yours.
And then, lastly, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but I think this is probably how this is pronounced. It's AKKMEDK. I'm going to say Akmedic. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Akmedic.
Thank you. I feel like we're getting memed again.
Meh, it's possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, if
but it turns out that's a real name and we're just complete assholes.
Sure, it could
be.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ekmedic. And if you're listening out there and thinking, hey, I like what these guys do, I'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. It would go to our Patreon and you can sign up and support the show.
It would be very lovely.
So, Jordan.
Yes, Dan.
It is now time.
Okay.
Let me read my introduction.
Okay. Bombs are coming!
No, they have come.
Oh, okay, that's right.
We are too late on your your alert. So, for the final time, I will introduce one of these episodes from the Boston bombing period by saying that when Alex gets on air on the 18th, people do not know very much. This is the episode right before what I'm going to call the fever breaks, and it's the last episode where Alex has legitimate free reign to create whatever story he wants out of the random bits of internet rumors that he can find. To recap a little bit, on our last installment, Alex had found some out-of-context images on 4chan and used them to create his own story of what happened at the Boston Marathon. He found people in the pictures that he felt fit his narrative and cast them like characters in a play. He saw some guys in what he decided were SEAL uniforms, so they were Marines who were there to run a drill. He saw a white guy that he felt looked stupid holding a backpack, so he got to be the tragic white patsy who the globalists are going to pin the crime on so they could blame the Patriots.
I'm pretty sure that one's going to be bear out to be true.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He saw some guys whose skin was brown carrying backpacks, so he decided that they were there to make it look like this white patsy was working with Al-Qaeda to validate Alex's theories that the media is obsessed with the idea of white right-wingers working with Al-Qaeda.
Which makes too much sense.
All of this was just made up out of whole cloth. None of this was in any way based on anything other than Alex's assumptions and a story that he came up with while looking at random photos. From there, Alex decided he'd scooped the media and that they had been forced to announce that the FBI had photos of the suspects because he had reported on those pictures that, again, he found on 4chan.
It's so funny.
After that point, Alex descended into a completely delusional state where he believed that the globalists were watching his every move and trying to counter him through the media. Then he interviewed Steve Pachanik, who stated that he was in a state of open treason and advocated lone actors attack the federal government. It was a fucked up show under any circumstances, but in the aftermath of this bombing, it was particularly distasteful.
Yeah, that one was wild.
Yeah.
I assume that it is much better and they retract all of that bullshit today and we're going to see all of them.
I don't know if they do.
Okay.
But the FBI had announced, by the time Alex gets on air, they had announced on the 17th that they had photos of the suspects. And Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano had testified before the House Homeland Security Committee regarding these images and videos that the investigation had zeroed in on. However, the actual images had not yet been released to the public when Alex gets on air on the 18th. And then another media outlet made a gigantic fuck-up. The New York Post put a picture of two men, two Moroccan gentlemen who had nothing to do with the bombing, on their front cover with the title, quote, Bag Men. They, the New York Post, they were operating off old tips from law enforcement who had for a moment considered them persons of interest, but had already excluded them as having anything to do with the bombing. So this was a huge problem.
Yeah.
With the New York Post's cover on the 18th.
I would say the New York Post is a huge problem.
Salon called it, quote, a new low. Others described it as appalling, and they were all right. In the ensuing fallout, it was easy to conflate the two events in your head, to imagine that the picture on the cover of the New York Post was the same one as the ones that were going to be released by the FBI and had been mentioned by Napolitano. And Alex makes exactly this mistake, which we'll discuss in greater detail as this episode goes on. The larger point for now is that when Alex gets into the studio, he has a lot of chaos and confusion to play with regarding these photos. In the absence of any real, actual information, that's about the best he could hope for at this point. He's in a pretty good position from a propaganda standpoint.
We would call it the pole position, if you will.
Sure. The FBI press conference is scheduled to happen while Alex is on air because he's extended his show 6 hours now.
Of course, of course.
And he knows that once the press conference happens, he needs to be firmly in place with his narrative. He knows that that's the moment that the metaphorical cement is going to dry. Once there's information backed up by an actual investigation available, his rambling bullshit's going to be pretty unconvincing to anyone he hasn't already convinced. So he has three main objectives. One, solidify the narrative. Two, establish a narrative about what the FBI release will be in hopes of preemptively discrediting it. And three, throw conspiracy spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks.
And four, of course, salt the water before you put the spaghetti in there. That otherwise
helps it stick.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my mama told me. Yeah. Mama! Also on this episode, we'll get a premiere of an InfoWars employee.
Yeah.
We will find a guest appearance from someone I've never heard on the show before, but I guess I've actually talked to them. Which is
really?
Weird. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Here's a weird intersection.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But
here's some small world action.
So this is the state that we're in here when Alex gets on air.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a mess. So here's the first clip where Alex is just sort of stating talking about the pictures, the FBI and people like Janet Napolitano talking about these pictures. They're just a cover up because InfoWars is so on the story.
I am going to attempt as best I can after the break when we come back to go over all the different facets of this. But we saw a massive cover-up yesterday. Within 5 minutes of us announcing, we had the photos and videos of what looked like Navy SEALs along with what looked like Saudi Arabians and what looked like good old boy patsies they were preparing to set up, all with black backpacks. CNN looked completely panicked during the break and said, oh, now there's been an arrest. There's going to be a press conference at 5. But then they figured out, wait, now when we show the photos that Jones has, then everyone's going to say, well, what about all these other people?
So that's kind of just a distillation of what he is, the state he's in as he's launching off on the 18th.
At what point do we have to declare like a legitimate delusional break from reality?
It's here. Right?
Like this is insane.
Yeah. There's elements of it that you can still kind of tell are performative.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I don't think it's like you got to chase him with a butterfly net or anything like that.
No.
But it's a balance here that you can definitely tell some of this is sincere.
Yeah.
He's buying his own bullshit, and then some of it is intentional manipulation.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to tell what's...
You can't find out the exact ratio, but yeah, he buys that he thinks he's really scooped the real media.
Yeah.
And you can tell because he's so excited because he's literally never done that before.
Uh-huh.
You know, he feels like, oh shit! I finally accidentally hit the jackpot on this.
I finally lived up to my promise.
Yeah, exactly. I have been lying for 20 years and finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the issue too with that, what we talked about a little bit on the last episode, the announcement that they'd made an arrest that was inaccurate never came from the Boston Police Department, the FBI. It was something that was from erroneous sources within the CNN.
Right.
So the idea that they said that they'd got him and all, they didn't. Mm-hmm. CNN got that wrong. You are right that was misreported.
Yeah.
But you can't claim that all of this, because CNN can't be running the patsy operation.
Right.
It stretches credulity to imagine, that they're able to do that. I understand that he's saying that the media is the presentation arm of all this.
Of course.
But they would have to be like so much deeper.
Right.
Anyway.
I'm gonna go with MSNBC is the one who did it.
Okay.
That's a surprise.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, see, that's the twist ending.
Right.
That's our Black Mirror episode. It was MSNBC all along.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'd watch that show.
Yeah.
So, there's a quirk from the night before, and that is about Obama. And this gets into, bullshit.
Okay.
That will kind of continue on this episode, because on the prior episode, on the 17th, Alex was looking at those pictures and seeing the people that he decided were Middle Eastern.
Sure.
And he was saying that these are North Africans and stuff. And now he's trying to retcon that and say that he always thought they were Saudi Arabians.
Because there's
Saudi Arabia talk going around on the 18th.
Yeah.
So all of that and more is coming up today. You had an emergency meeting with the Saudi foreign minister and Obama that was not on the schedule, with all sorts of sedans pulling up and freaking out. You had them talking about deporting a Saudi who was arrested. Oh, he's a suspect, but we're going to deport him. Let's not.
For the sake of total clarity there, Alex just trails off in the middle of that sentence.
Yeah.
I didn't cut it there like intentionally to try and make it look like he doesn't finish his thought. He does not finish his thought. It just stops. So regarding Obama meeting with the Saudi foreign minister, this is something that's easy to misrepresent, but I don't think it has anything to do with the bombing at all. At this point in 2013, Obama was in the middle of a series of meetings with leaders from around the Middle East region, hoping to find solutions to the situation with Iran, as well as the civil war in Syria. He did meet with the Saudi foreign minister, Saud al-Falzal, but he was far from the only person that he met with. I was able to find a story in the Times of Israel from April 17th, 2013, about Obama meeting with the Crown Prince of UAE. The article mentions that Obama planned to meet with the leaders from Qatar and Jordan in the coming week, with their meetings having to do with, again, Iran and the civil war in Syria.
Yeah.
The other meetings with foreign leaders were largely ignored by folks like Alex and the right-wing media because they didn't have as easy connection to possible a conspiracy angle on the bombing. There was already a quote-unquote anomaly with the bombing that had to do with Saudi Arabia.
Right. Context is the enemy of lies, I guess.
Sure. I've mentioned a couple times so far in our Boston bombing coverage how there was a Saudi national who was questioned in the immediate aftermath of the attack and how the media had been asking questions about whether or not this individual had any connection with what had happened. And he'd been totally cleared. No problem. You know, he wasn't involved. He was injured in the bombing.
Right. Although, admittedly, Crown Prince MBS would go on to cause a lot more problems.
I don't think it was MBS.
Are you sure?
Who was the one he had a meeting with.
Okay.
It was not. It was a foreign minister.
I was talking about the national at the bombing.
Fair enough. So, look, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that Alex has largely ignored this story up to this point. The reporting on this Saudi national who had been questioned in the hospital when they'd found him after he had been injured. Either way, now Alex is picking up this thread, so here's what's going on with that. That was a student who was questioned by the police, and he was never thought to be guilty of a crime, and the idea of him being deported never came up. Outside of gossip mills and bad right-wing website reporting, which ended up finding its way into the mouth of one of the senators who was questioning Janet Napolitano in the Homeland Security Committee.
Right. Because if you elect a Republican, you're dumb and so are they.
This student was actually injured in the bombing, the person who was questioned. And the amount of attention and suspicion directed his way was probably a good example of the media grasping at straws to cover a story that they had no real information about. On May 24th, 2013, the Washington Post reported that the Saudi students, that Saudi student had made his first public comments, covering an interview that he did with the Islamic Monthly. He told them, quote, he has continued to receive death threats and hate mail to the degree that he has not moved back to his house or resumed his normal life. In his words, discussing being at the hospital while being questioned, quote, they were really scared of me. I'm injured. I don't have anything. And they ask me, what do you have in your hand? All the police officers and the FBI and all the nurses and doctors were staring at me. I was looking at them like, is it because of the color of my skin or is it because of the name of my country?
Yes, to both.
After his name was leaked to the media and covered so suspiciously and salaciously by the right-wing media, implying that he was being deported as a part of a Saudi cover-up, his life got derailed. Quote, I don't know if I'm going to continue my studies. I came in to study my bachelor's. I have a full scholarship from my country. I don't know if I'm going to be safe from other people because I lost my privacy. So that's why I'm really scared. So it's not an easy thing to forget. Simultaneously, a second student in Massachusetts had been taken in by ICE on an administrative immigration violation because they were in the country to go to school and had not registered for classes. This was a completely different person. The situation was 100% unrelated to the bombing, but the right-wing media heard Saudi student twice and just assumed that there couldn't be more than one Saudi student in the school in the Boston area. It's got to be the same person.
I mean, do we really want humans to survive? Honestly,
I would like them to survive with better critical thinking skills.
Yeah. Like really? Like, we kind of have it coming.
There are so many big schools around Boston. There's Boston University, Boston College, Harvard, Emerson, MIT, Northeastern University, and tons more.
Pretty sure I just heard college.
There are a lot of Saudi Arabian students who come to the U.S. to pursue a degree, mostly due to the King Abdullah Scholarship Program. The program provides students with free tuition, covers their living expenses, and even pays for a trip back to Saudi Arabia to visit family once a year. According to NAFSA, the Association of International Educators, quote, in 2012, the United States saw record numbers of Saudi Arabian students enrolled in academic institutions around the country. The number cited for the 2012-2013 school year in the Chronicle of Higher Education is 107,000 Saudi Arabian students enrolled in U.S. colleges.
I cannot believe 107,000 people did the Boston bombing together. That is just
according to
so
these right-wing
many,
sources.
So many.
Yeah.
How did they all keep it a secret for so long?
According to College Factual, a website that tracks various aspects of colleges to help prospective students determine which school is best for them, three schools in the Boston area are in the top 10 for prospective students from Saudi Arabia. Northeastern University is number 2, Boston University is number 3, and Harvard is number 7. One of the qualifications the site used to determine their rankings was, quote, the presence of students from Saudi Arabia on campus. So it's safe to assume that there were large numbers of Saudi Arabian students in the region at these colleges, and thus one being injured in the Boston bombing and one failing to register for classes makes total sense. I probably went too far in looking into this particular detail,
but
I think it's important to clearly show how unfounded and stupid the assumption that's being made here about this, that this is the same person. This student who was questioned and the student who was taken in by ICE for administrative violations.
I can't think of any time historically where the mob has been wrong. So this is amazing to me.
Look, I just want to point out that these are the sorts of assumptions that these right-wing narratives are being built on. And they're absurd if you take any kind of close analysis of it. Like, you really look at what's being put out. And so when Janet Napolitano is asked about this, because the guy questioning her in the Homeland Security Committee is asking, like, hey, do you think it's right that we're deporting this person? Even if they're not a suspect, they might have information about the bombing.
Yeah.
And she's like, they're obviously not talking about deporting the guy who was questioned.
Yeah, so
she won't answer the question. She's like, there's so many inaccuracies in that question. I'm not even going to answer that.
Yeah.
And then that's taken as evidence of like a cover up, or she won't even answer the question. It's such a trap.
I would like to say to the great senator from the state of Montana, you're a fucking idiot. Shut up. Sit down.
Yeah. So Alex gets around to bragging because through his efforts and through, I don't know, the way he's sending Dan Bedondi out to harass people at these press conferences, the term false flag has become a very high Google trend.
But this is a no-brainer if you study false flags, stage events. By the way, Adon Salazar has an article going up at Infowars.com showing the analytics from Google on false flag. It is one of the top terms in America right now, people looking up what a false flag is. Harry Reid freaked out and said, how dare you say it's a false flag? They're panicking. They know more and more people are looking at them. And I was just watching the governor and all them soaking up, like acting like rock stars, loving the attention right now at the memorial service. It's truly disgusting.
There's a certain irony to Alex saying that these people who are public servants trying to inform the public are soaking in the attention while he has just said, hey, my sort of trademark term is Google trending.
Yeah.
And we had Adon Salazar, who unfortunately no longer follows us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. If you're still listening, though, buddy, you're still a piece of
shout
shit.
Shout out.
Yeah.
He's written an article about how we have good Google trends.
Yes. Great.
Yeah, I feel the exact sort of navel gazing that he's accusing the governor of Boston of doing.
Right.
Which seems a little bit crass.
Well, self-awareness is one of the things that on the resume, if you put that for an InfoWars application, they will light your resume on fire and find you.
Yeah.
And then punch you in the face.
It's disqualified.
Cannot have self-awareness.
So the night before this, on the night of the 17th, there was an explosion in Texas. And it's kind of interesting the way that Alex is covering it, because you'd think it would be the biggest deal.
It would be a false flag by the cops, I would assume.
Or, yeah, the globalists are doing something.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would think. But instead, he doesn't seem to cover it that much. There's a dismissiveness to Alex's approach to this, which I find really interesting. But if you're paying attention to, it's very sarcastic. It's very much a, like, he thinks that this is a false flag, but he's pretending like it's so obviously a false flag that he's being like, about it. It's a shitty tone.
And we are going to be breaking down all of the massive news that has been unfolding on the Second Amendment front with the fertilizer factory up by Waco exploding spectacularly and killing between 10 and 70 people. There's different numbers coming out. Incidentally, there's a big statewide drill going on yesterday and today there with helicopters and ambulances and everything at the nearby hospital, but probably just fertilizer catching on fire and exploding. All of this is obviously important, but the magnitude of what we are about to cover here today is of undoubtedly undoubtedly is the culmination of 18 years of my work.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
This is my career.
Can't. Gotta focus. Gotta focus on this one. I'm finally right for the first time. I know for sure that the fertilizer factory was a fertilizer explosion.
It's all been building up to this.
Can't lie about that. So this one, I'm right on. Let's fucking do it.
No, but if you listen to that closely, like he's saying it was clearly fertilizer catching on fire to say it was not.
No, for sure.
He's saying there's a fucking statewide drill going on all that. That's obviously saying it's a false flag.
Right. No, I understand that. I mean, like, it's just, I know I'm going to be lying about that.
Right.
Whereas with this one, I think I'm telling the truth.
And I don't have time to lie about this right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got to put that on the back burner for later.
That's what I think.
So like I said, on the night of the 17th, a fire broke out at this fertilizer plant, and approximately 20 minutes later, the whole thing blew up. In an explosion so large that it registered 2.1 on the Richter scale.
Jesus.
15 people were killed and at least 200 were injured, not to even consider the amount of, like, property damage to surrounding homes.
Woof.
One of them was a old folks' home that a lot of people got hurt there.
Cool.
What exactly happened here is actually still a matter of intense debate. The ATF released the results of their investigation on in May 2016, which concluded that the fire that had led to the explosion was determined to have been set intentionally. Some critics have claimed that this conclusion is inappropriate since they feel that the ATF only decided that because they couldn't give any other explanation for how the fire had started. I'm not entirely sure which side I think has the better point. You would assume that if the ATF would make the determination that the fire was arson, they'd only do that in the case of them having excluded other possibilities. It seems unlikely that they would do a years-long investigation then declare something intentional without considering those other possibilities. That said, to this day, no specific explanation is known, and no one has been arrested for the fire, so it's really anyone's guess.
That's weird.
What exactly happened there, yeah.
Man, I mean, you gotta be pretty stoked if you get away with blowing up a fertilizer factory and nobody knows why.
Sure.
That's
I don't know,
pretty,
stoked, I would say guilty.
I would say that's Ocean's 11 planning is what
I would feel
saying
tortured,
right there.
Probably, if I got away with that.
I mean, if you want to blow up a fertilizer factory,
I guess
you can't feel tortured about it when you do.
I don't know, maybe you could, but I guess,
that's true.
I guess if it's your goal to do it, you'd probably be like, wow.
Woohoo!
So something that leads me to suspect human involvement was an article in Reuters where they discussed police records involving the plant that they'd looked over from the past 12 years. Apparently, the plant was a very frequent target for the theft of chemicals, since anhydrous ammonia that is in their fertilizer is also something people use to cook meth.
Right.
From Reuters, quote, according to a 2002 crime report, a plant manager told the police that intruders were stealing 4 to 5 gallons of anhydrous ammonia every 3 days.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
That's a lot!
Yeah. And consistent.
That's some good meth!
And the problem here, Jordan, is that they didn't ramp up security in response to these regular break-ins. Reuters found at least 11 reports of burglaries and, quote, 5 separate ammonia leaks at the plant in the prior 12 years.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with inside job.
Or just people who would come in to try and steal shit. They'd also, like, mess with the valves and stuff.
For sure. Why not?
There's so many possibilities in terms of, like, there's a lot of people who weren't supposed to be here who seem to be coming here a lot to steal chemicals. But none of that's conclusive, but it would seem to indicate a bit of a pattern of negligence on the part of the plant to secure their facility, which would leave it open to either an arsonist or someone trying to steal shit who just makes a huge mistake that ends up causing a fire.
Yeah, it sounds more like if we're dealing with chemicals to cook meth, I'm leaning more towards the guy came in and was like, oh, fuck, I fucked that up. And boom!
Recklessness is entirely possible, but still, ugh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened here other than it was a horrible tragedy for the people of West Texas, the city of West. It was absolutely unrelated to the Boston bombing, and I have a strong suspicion that Alex is being, like I said, facetious when he says it was just fertilizer catching on fire. I think he does think that it's related, otherwise why would he bring up this alleged drill that took place? I can find literally zero evidence that there was a hospital drill there at the time. An article in Nurse.com discusses how the medical staff at Hillcrest Baptist Medical Center and Providence Health Center dealt with the chaotic and traumatic situation with a near-heroic level of poise. The two hospitals had to treat hundreds of extra patients with a range of injuries, more or less all at once. They worked effectively as a team, and Heather Branch, the assistant manager of the Hillcrest Hospital Emergency Department, said, quote, "It was a life-changing experience. We'll forever know that no matter what disaster rolls through the doors, we will always be there for each other." One of the reasons they were able to operate so effectively as a team and able to treat victims so effectively is that a year prior, they had been part of a drill that recreated an emergency situation like this, which involved hospitals from the surrounding five counties. It involved inter-hospital cooperation, which was an essential piece of the response to the fertilizer plant explosion. Eileen Bohannon, the emergency department director at Providence Health Center, said, quote, "What we learned from previous drills were put into place for this, and I cannot tell you how smoothly it ran." The only reality to the idea that there were hospital drills involved in the actual location that was affected by this is that a year prior, nurses and doctors learned immensely valuable lessons about teamwork and crisis management that they were able to put into action that literally saved lives.
Yeah, if you do drills, that means you're setting up a false flag. If you don't do drills and you fail miserably, that means the globalists fucking tried to destroy you. I hate these people so much, but thank God they did that drill. That's amazing.
Now,
that's really cool.
Yeah. Now, and it's very interesting to see the actual fruits of the drill.
Yeah. Yeah.
To see these people were able to do this triage so effectively, and the article's talking about how some of the people that were coming in that were needing treatment were people that they knew.
Yeah.
And so people were crying, nurses were breaking down in the middle of it, and people would tag in. You know, you'd be able to okay, go cry in the other room for 5 minutes and no one's judging each other because they understand that this is a human part of the response.
Right.
And there's a job that needs to be done. And you also have to accommodate people who are having a difficult time with the job.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to do that so effectively had it not been for the consideration of that training.
Oh yeah. Imagine somebody you know coming in with a broken arm and you happen to be hey, you're nowhere near as important as these 40 people, and you have to just say, sitting there, I know you're my friend, and maybe you won't talk to me as much after this, but
it'd be very difficult.
I got to save lives, yo.
Now, later in the episode, actually more information comes up about this, so I might as well just talk about this now. It's clarified that they're not talking about that drill from a year ago.
No.
Although the hospitals that were affected and actually in the area of this fertilizer plant explosion, that's the only drill that's relevant to them. Alex and his people are actually talking about a drill that that did not affect those hospitals. There was an emergency preparedness drill planned for April 18th, 2013, at the North Hills Medical Center, but it was canceled because of the explosion on the night of the 17th. Now, this might be interesting if North Hills Medical Center was in Waco or in West, but it's not. It's 80 miles north in North Richland Hills, Texas, a suburb of Fort Worth. This game is so fucking sad. You see how flimsy this shit is, and you realize that there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you could do to correct this. If you think a drill at a hospital 80 miles away on the wrong day is somehow cause for suspicion of whether or not this explosion is real or the work of the globalists, you're almost certainly past the point of getting back to reality. And that's why Alex doesn't speak in specifics.
Right.
Because he would know that this shit is fucking weak as hell.
10-minute drive isn't that big a deal. You could set up a drill 80 miles north, throw people off your scent, drive an hour and 10 minutes south, blow up a factory, get back up there and be like, we gotta cancel the drill.
Bullshit.
Easy stuff.
Nope.
Easy stuff.
Nope.
I'm not saying I've planned one before. I'm just saying that
it invalidates Alex's conspiracies, quite frankly.
Of course.
So now we get to Alex talking about these pictures some more that he found on 4chan. And it's interesting the way he needs to really strengthen this argument.
Yeah.
Because I think maybe when he got off air, he kind of realized you know what? Those are just pictures that we found on 4chan.
Right.
We might need to really dress this up and make it look like this is some really official shit.
I think the best way to go over this today is to start at the beginning of what happened. Anonymous, and that's all they want to be known as. Anonymous has contacted us as well, and it is a real group affiliated with a white hat, Anonymous, and said, have you seen this data dump of photos and videos? This shows what appears to be Navy SEALs, and that was in one of their data dumps I hadn't even gotten to yet, and I saw it was Navy SEALs. And it shows what looks like Saudi nationals, and it shows what looks like the Patsies, and sure enough, it's dead on analysis. It shows the redneck patsies.
So it's now some white hat intelligence operatives who are operating as Anonymous, who have sent him this data dump.
Sure.
As opposed to Paul Joseph Watson was lurking on on an anonymous message board and found some pictures with squiggly lines drawn on them.
They set it up in our digital Dropbox.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So as the time has gone on now, Alex has only become more convinced that he is leading the media and that the media is in fact scared of what he's doing on air. And I would say that there's probably some truth to that. Like, I think right-thinking people who are aware of what he was doing.
Oh, I'm very scared of what he's doing on air. Yeah.
Scared of the effect that this could have. but I don't think they're scared in terms of he's blowing our cover or anything. Right, I think they're like,
hey, he's got a guy on calling for treason. Yeah. Are we okay? I don't think.
Not just calling for treason, calling for act.
Armed treason. Yeah.
Clone actors.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So Alex is certain that he does something, the media responds.
Sure.
And I want to explain something. They monitor this show. That's on record. 5 minutes after we broke this yesterday at noon central, high noon, I walked out and had three TVs on, two in here and one in the pantry, in the break room. And I watched CNN and MSNBC, the reporters, while their guests were talking, getting messages in their ears. And I saw the adrenaline rush, like when you catch burglars in your house or something. And I knew what was about to come out of their mouth. And I ran back in here and I said, watch this. And I knew what they were going to say next out of their mouth, because live time, they were listening to us. It's 5 minutes later. And Blitzer goes, they've now arrested a suspect and they've got photos. They're going to be releasing photos very soon. And I went on air and I said, I just saw them freak out. They're going to release photos. But I said, if they're smart, and I guess they were listening to that, they actually won't, because now we're going to be able to point out everybody else in the other photos, the Navy SEALs, the Saudis that were getting ready to go with the good old boy angle. The liberal media run by the White House, MSNBC, Media Matters, all of them, had already come out and said, it will be a white person. It's a lone wolf. Janet Napolitano had said that. Axelrod, the fix was in. And ladies and gentlemen, we blew their op. Look.
He's convinced, completely blown the op.
Man, that's one of those things where I almost just want to be like, okay. And then just, like, fine.
Unfortunately, you and I are probably the only people who can't respond that way. Everyone else can just be like, all right, Alex, go ahead.
It's just like, ah, that's so terrible.
Yeah.
No one is listening to you.
And I think actually a lot of people are now, but not the imagined globalists.
No.
In hindsight, this whole thing is really easy to see through as a transparent display of narcissism and a guy being wrong. The easiest way to put it is that Alex thinks that he's way ahead of this story when he's nowhere near anything real. The only thing that I think is important to point out here is that Alex is once again massaging facts from the day prior in order to make it look like he called everything. First, the announcement that the FBI had photos was made prior to the erroneous announcement that an arrest had been made. It makes little sense for them to announce those two things simultaneously, as if they're saying, we captured the guy and took some pictures for you. This is a blurring of the timeline Alex is using to make it seem like the mainstream media was in even greater disarray and chaos than they actually were, because that's the image he needs to present. He needs you to think that they had legitimately no idea what to do because Alex was blowing the case wide open and their response was completely nonsensical coverage. The second thing is that he never predicted that CNN was going to announce they had photos. He may have said that off air. I guess I can't prove that he didn't, but he never said that on air. Alex was completely surprised when CNN made their announcement and freaking out himself. Third, he did predict that they would need to come up with new photos of people to pin on the attack, or pin the attack on, because Alex had blown the case wide open. And this, I guess, could be called an interpretation of the FBI releasing photos of completely different people than Alex was talking about. Another possibility, which I think is infinitely more likely, is that the FBI had zeroed in on the actual culprits while Alex was playing detective with a bunch of random idiots on 4chan, and ultimately they were not talking about the same photos at all. This is where Alex's groundwork becomes so amazingly important. On the last episode, we heard him say at least twice that although he had figured out this entire case and he was right about everything, there's a chance that the globalists would change their plans.
Could happen.
That single caveat is so crucial to his ability to sustain being wrong all the time while pretending he's always right. If he's able to construct a reality where he's always right and evidence that contradicts his predictions and narratives is just the globalists changing their plans because he's too right, there's ultimately nothing you can do to disprove him. He's crafted an inescapable box for his audience to live in, and that's a really shitty thing for him to do ever. but particularly in response to a large national tragedy like this, it's monstrous.
Yeah. His like, retconning reminds me so much of, In the Loop. Have you ever seen that movie?
I've heard, oh wait.
Armando Iannucci, he's the guy who did The Thick of It.
I thought you were talking about that movie that starred the guys from NSYNC.
No,
I think
that
that's
one.
Also called In the Loop.
Was that, from Justin DeKelly? Was that the one?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's, from American Idol.
No, there was this, they were having this, meeting, in the government to see, it's like a thinly veiled thing about the Iraq War.
Uh-huh.
Not even thinly veiled, it is. And this guy is directing his aide to rewrite the notes from the meeting. And he's said something so chilling, which is just like, it doesn't matter what was said. What matters is what should have been said.
Uh-huh.
And he's rewriting the whole thing. And it's like, that is such Alex the next day of just like, it doesn't matter what I did say.
Right.
This is what I meant to have said.
Right.
And that's all that matters.
Right. And now it's canon.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
that's
not okay to do when you try to pass yourself off as like a psychic.
Yeah.
It's fine if you're just like, hey, I'm a guy who rewrites my past predictions in order to make them match what happens.
Right.
But so in that last clip, we heard him say that Wolf Blitzer came on and said that they'd made an arrest and they have photos, blurring the timeline a bit.
Right.
And now it's clear in this next clip from just a tiny bit after that, Alex is clear that the photo announcement came before the botched and erroneous announcement of an arrest.
And sure enough, he says right out of his mouth, well, they've got some photos of some of the suspects right there near the finish line. They're going to be releasing. They need our help with. And then by the next break, they talked about the arrest. They were like, well, let's hurry up then and just roll out our John Doe number one, the redneck. But see, then they went, no, you can't do that. Everyone's already got the photos.
Alex is just making all of that up.
Wow.
He's assuming what was going on in a place he has zero information about.
Yeah.
He's assuming that he knows everything about what was going on with the people behind the scenes at CNN. And,
sure.
That's important to point out repeatedly. He's just making this up.
Completely.
He has nothing to base this on.
Yeah, well, of course he is, because we all know that Wolf Blitzer can only say Wolf Blitzer. He's like a Pokemon. Just some people understand him. He just always says, Wolf Blitzer, Wolf Blitzer.
They teach
Wolf
you that Blitzer. In Israeli intelligence,
yeah,
which
exactly.
Alex believes Wolf Blitzer is a part of.
How to read Wolf Blitzer.
Uh-huh. So I believe that Alex is dwelling in a state of very financially lucrative delusions at this stretch. He has another take on it.
You're seeing, like, a spy movie on air right now. That's what's going on here. This
Peter
is just
Taylor
completely and totally unprecedented in the history of media.
I played that also to show that he's
unprecedented.
Saying unprecedented a bunch still.
We're on an unprecedented number of unprecedented.
I believe that you could argue that this is like a spy movie playing out on air, but it's a spy movie that Alex is writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fiction.
Right.
So that's misleading and really abusive to his audience.
I mean, you could say that War of the Worlds was an alien invasion being played out on air. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. Good. Didn't happen, but yeah.
So Alex gets back to talking about the Anonymous that sent him the data dump here. And he seems to think that they're good guys in like the CIA. Or the FBI.
Sure,
they're,
why not?
They're intelligence community good guys.
Yeah.
Anonymous sends us this info. And then the disinfo ops come out and say, oh, well, maybe the government wanted this stuff out. This stuff had been out on Twitter and Facebook for days. We went yesterday and took the images that Anonymous sent us that Watson discovered, and we're now in contact with them. We took the images, ran it through a Google image search to find where they originally came from. It will show you the originator, for those that don't know. That's been out for a couple years. And we found the Facebooks in places where people had just uploaded this. So they went out, probably intelligence people that don't like what's happening, grabbed all this, sent it to us, and said, here it is, okay, Jones? And then we put it out, and then Drudge picked it up, and it was all over. The beginning of the collapse of the cover-up then began last night when Drudge linked to us.
Good job, Drudge.
Yeah, thanks, Drudge.
So he believes that these are good guys in intelligence who hate the false flags that are going on. So
sure.
They got all the data dumped, sent it to Alex, and they're like, go ahead, Jones, broadcast it. Ugh.
I think it's so funny to me. Him announcing that they did a Google image search was like... That is the most research they have ever admitted actually happening on this
and
show.
And I honestly don't even believe that it's true.
They They just went to a couple Facebook pages of their friends.
I think Alex just knows that Google image search exists.
Right.
I think that's all that's happening here. So at this point, Alex is now kind of, because the questioning of Janet Napolitano involved like questions about this Saudi Arabian national that was supposedly going to be deported, who's being conflated with the guy who was injured in the bombing.
Sure.
The talk of Saudi nationals has now become much more popular in the conspiracy world. And so now Alex is starting to build a case that it's probably going to get pinned on Saudi Arabians.
They are completely and totally freaked out, and they should be, because here's the deal. Emergency meeting with the Saudi foreign minister. They announced they're going to deport. Now they're all freaking out, this Saudi who was there, but saying he's not a suspect. Now they're having to show what looks like the Saudis. You watch, it's going to be Saudis. Now they're freaking out about that and saying, well, they're not suspects, but we want to know, because they have to, because everybody on the Internet's already seen this.
That's not a necessary thing for them to do.
No.
People on the Internet having seen out-of-context images that they've created a narrative out of,
right,
does not really have an impact on an investigation that's real. So Alex is, you know, he's saying it's going to be the Saudis.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has the same level of truth to it as a rumor in 2013 that Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt were getting back together. I think they're right on the same level.
It's as relevant to anything.
Well, we saw him eating dinner one night.
And it's also not true. Like, this prediction turns out to not be accurate. I was saying, I think they're going to go with Saudis. Nope, they didn't.
And Brad and Jennifer never got back together, so.
Well, what a tragedy.
Yeah, it is sad.
So, in this next clip, Alex asserts that yesterday, on the 17th, they were all set to blame white gun owners.
I mean, this is unbelievable. And they were going to blame gun owners yesterday. They were going to have their press conference. They were going to roll out the patsy. Let's see the patsy. It was actually two of them. Let's see the Beavis and Butthead central casting achy breaky heart look-alike mullet guy. Who's also got a backpack that matches the one that actually exploded with the strap.
So Alex is just certain that yesterday they were going to blame that guy. He was going to be the patsy. It all got blown up in their face because of Alex's reporting. And now they're having to shift who they're going to pin it on. He's saying now it's going to be the Saudis, probably right, because he saw the cover of the New York Post, assumed it's the same as the DHS
right.
FBI photos. It's very simple to see through what's going on here.
Yeah.
This is very bad work.
Yeah.
But one of the elements that he's using that is mixed up in his narrative is that on the 17th, they had a bomb scare and a bomb threat that got called into the courthouse that ended up making them cancel the press conference they were going to hold that day.
Right.
He's determined that he knows why that happened.
And they were going to roll him out yesterday, but didn't. Then they had to evacuate the courthouse to get the press out to take this guy out the back door, and he's probably in a cement shoes right now. So this is unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, we have blown a major New World operation sky high. Oh, my. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. That's true.
I don't believe it.
I think it's impossible to believe.
So first thing here, Alex has literally no reason to think that this white guy in the photos that he found on 4chan and he's decided is the chosen patsy for the globalists to blame is dead. He has literally zero reason to think that the police ever even talked to that guy. To be clear, the only thing that connects him to being in any way important to this story is internet rumor and Alex's fantasies. This is the definition of terrible work on Alex's part. I don't know who this white guy in these pictures, who he is. And I don't particularly want to dig too deep into it to try and find out. Everything I can find leads me to believe that he's just a private citizen who was at the marathon, who became a central focus on the internet's witch hunt, largely motivated by Alex Jones's desperate need to validate his fears that a white person was going to be blamed for the bombing. Until anyone can prove that he is anything other than a marathon attendee who happened to have a backpack, I believe he deserves his privacy, and I wouldn't violate that even to prove Alex Jones wrong. But there's a more important aspect to this. And that is that wherever this guy was in the days after the bombing, he was very likely not aware, or maybe he was aware, that pictures of him were being spread all over the internet, implying that he was involved in a plan to murder and maim his fellow citizens. All evidence seems to indicate that he was a victim of this attack, and that he was there when the attack happened, You know, not necessarily sure that he got injured or whatever he might have been. I don't know. But anyone who was there, I consider a victim of this tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And instead of being left to process his experience and move on with his life, he's now being blamed for the very thing he just unfortunately had to live through. And I don't know what his experience with that was like. But from the account of that Saudi Arabian student we discussed earlier, you have to assume that it wasn't a positive experience. Going from experiencing the terror of a terrorist attack to immediately having unfounded suspicion thrown your way is going to be a different thing, a difficult thing for anyone to go through. As I mentioned in the intro, on April 18th, the New York Post ran that cover story with an image of two other people that were gathering internet suspicion with the text, quote, "Bag men, feds seek these two pictured at the Boston Marathon." The problem was that they'd gotten this, it was the wrong picture. And the one they ran wasn't the one that the FBI was set to release or anything that the DHS had announced, but in a frenzy to be the first to report, they committed an egregious act of journalistic malfeasance. This picture that they had published had been circulated by law enforcement, but it wasn't in the context that these two were suspects. Also, other emails that were later produced clearly said that these men were, quote, "not of interest," and that their being singled out was based on, quote, "bogus intel." In October 2014, the New York Post would settle a defamation lawsuit for this cover for an undisclosed amount. But something it is so important to not lose sight of is how damaging these actions are to the people who are the subject of them. The Washington Post reported on one of the men featured on the New York Post cover, who was only 17 years old. His father said, quote, "His son now only sleeps 1 or 2 hours a night and sometimes refuses to go to school." This kind of fuck-up is deeply traumatic to the people who end up having internet mobs track them down, or they can't go to school without everyone thinking they were a part of a plot to kill civilians.
Yeah.
As we criticize Alex's coverage, it's important to point out things like this, like that the New York Post did, because if we didn't, it would be slightly dishonest.
They got sued to fucking oblivion, right?
Not to oblivion, but and it's an undisclosed amount, so I don't know how much they gave, but that's exactly the important thing that's the other side of it. Like, as we criticize the media like them for their horrible errors, there's a distinction that the New York Post apologized and got sued for this.
Yeah.
Alex Jones isn't held to those same standards. He relishes acting in this destructive way, and he does it with impunity. For me, that's a very relevant difference. As for the courthouse, that was only evacuated briefly because of a bomb threat that turned out to not be real. The thing here is that the only thing Alex has to base his theory that they did this evacuation to quietly take the white patsy out the back door, the only thing that's based on is his own thoughts. There's literally nothing else supporting this. He can't prove even a basic piece of this theory, and it's just embarrassing. It's made even worse by the fact that at the same time they evacuated that courthouse, the police also evacuated one of the plazas in front of the entrance to Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, which Alex weirdly doesn't bring up. Alex has his explanation that's based on literally nothing except paranoid delusions, whereas the reality seems a lot like, this is a city that just suffered a bombing, and they're taking any bomb threats pretty seriously, whether or not they're definitely credible.
Yeah.
And that interferes with government business. It interferes with police business.
I can't imagine, like, that first text. You know, you wake up in the morning and somebody texts you and they're like, "The internet thinks you did it."
Mm-hmm.
That's just like, it makes you almost want everybody to have a fucking kill switch for all of their social media profiles that just scrubs them clean and a fucking bug out bag.
Right, but then the internet just thinks you're even more suspicious.
Yeah, that's fine. Bug out, get to fucking Nova Scotia and stay there for a year.
Yeah, it's terrifying
to
imagine, like, what, like, you can't do anything. You can't come out and
it's
say,
over.
Like, I'm innocent.
Nope.
You get more suspicion on you. You can't. You just got to let it blow over and hope no one doxes you and finds your address or something.
You got to lay low for a while.
Yeah,
that's awful.
So in this next clip, Alex pretends that he had predicted that it would be the Saudis already.
Of course.
Which I don't believe is true based on my listening of these episodes. But I'll let him have his after-the-fact predictions, I guess.
And remember, folks, I said before all this happened yesterday, I said, you watch, they're going to come out and say the Saudis are the people with these photos. And then a day later, the photos we break, that we show you, and the Drudge amplifies. Homeland Security comes out and says, here's the person of interest, and it's the very stills and photos we showed you yesterday, and no media gives us credit instead of making fun of us and attacking us.
Alex is very needy. on this episode, if you hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
He really wants a pat on the head for doing this great reporting.
I mean, if he does a good job for the first time, he really wants people to have to, like, sit down and be like, fine, this one time, you win, great, we'll give you this one.
No, he wants his own parade.
Yeah.
Like, he just, that's what he wants. He wants everyone to, like, be like, God, you have been right all along,
right,
Alex.
Right.
You have validated years of bullshit with this. This breaks the case. And initially, I had no idea what Alex was talking about, this idea that the DHS released the same photos that he was rambling about. So I've looked into it, and I can't find any indication that the DHS had released any photos of the suspects up till this point. The furthest they'd gone was that Janet Napolitano had testified that they did have photos of the suspects.
Yeah.
From further digging, I know that Alex is just talking about the New York Post story. I consulted the InfoWars website and found that on April 18th, Paul Joseph Watson posted an article titled, Breaking, Police Confirm InfoWars Photos of Boston Suspects, which is all just about the New York Post cover. They're making this faulty assumption that that is the confirmed police photo.
Okay.
It's very unlike InfoWars to make corrections, but I think it's because the New York Post did get sued for this.
Right.
And that might explain why this article includes an editor's note. Quote, the above photo was originally given to the New York Post by the FBI as persons of interest. A day later, the FBI said that they were no longer persons of interest. That, of course, means that the police did not confirm InfoWars photos, and this article is total bullshit. However, it does clarify for me that this is absolutely what Alex is talking about when he imagines that the DHS had the same pictures as him. One important thing to point out here, though, is that the picture on the cover of the New York Post is absolutely not the same ones that Alex has been obsessing about.
That was my first issue.
It's not the same thing. Alex is very focused on the white patsy and the guys that he's decided that are, they're Marines. Whereas the Post cover had these two Moroccan gentlemen, one of whom doesn't even have a backpack on, he has a shoulder strap bag. The FBI would go on to release the images of the suspects taken from surveillance cameras on April 18th in the afternoon. But like I said, it's an afternoon press conference, so that hasn't happened by the time Alex is here on air talking about photos being released. This is all probably another negative result of the New York Post cover. Alex has decided it's an official DHS release, and now he's worked it into his narratives, further reinforcing the idea that he's right about everything. It's real simple, but it's one of those things, like, the path is really windy,
yeah,
but it's not hard to walk if you just look at it.
Right.
It's not much of a maze.
You could just take it down, man. You don't have to leave an editor's note there. I mean, you should leave an editor's note there, but you should take the article down off of InfoWars. You can't write an article confirming you're correct with an editor's note saying we were wrong.
Right.
It can't be.
It's super rare on InfoWars. Like, I have found so many articles where they're just straight up 100% wrong about things. They've just left up. No editor's notes, nothing. I have to think it's just because of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Then just be like, let's make sure we're not even close
to the tiniest correction. Yeah.
So at this point, Alex repeats a little bit of internet rumor about this is one of those conspiracy spaghetti against the wall things.
Yeah. Jennifer and Brad are getting back together.
Sure.
Did you know that the marathon ended? The tape ended at, what is it, 666 Boyd Street?
Okay.
And we'll put that
up. All right. Shut
Boylston Street. 666 Boylston Street. I mean, just the weirdness of all of this. And it's so many times stuff like this happens. You know, that's the psychopaths leaving their little calling card for you right there.
Ah, the devil. So if Alex thinks it's worth reporting that the marathon ended at 666 Boylston Street, I have some bad news about Jared Kushner's property on Fifth Avenue. Don't look into that, Alex. If you look up this bit of non-trivia about the marathon ending at 666 Boylston, you'll find a bunch of very reputable sources picking up the story after the 18th, probably in response to Alex amplifying it. We're talking about UFOblogger.com. We're talking about USAHitman.com. We're talking about GalacticConnection.com. You know, all the heavy hitters of hard-hitting news.
Right. And the New York Post, of course.
Sure. Wouldn't put it past them.
Right.
However, if you track down where this tidbit was being reported earlier than April 18th, there's only one outlet, and thus it clearly has to be where Alex is taking this information from. It's a little bullshit website called BeforeIt'sNews.com. Before It's News was started in 2008, possibly with good intentions, as a place where any citizen journalist out there could post news items they thought needed more coverage. Naturally, this quickly became a favored place for completely insane people to masquerade their nonsense as journalism. Anybody who would take this place as a credible place to find information is a complete hack or delusional. Just for fun, I decided to look back and see what Before It's News was running as some of their front page stories at the time when Alex must have taken this 666 shit from them.
I'm telling you, somebody was a lizard in these.
Unfortunately, there's no snapshot in the Wayback Machine from the 18th, Boo. But there is one from the 19th, and here are some of their headlines. Quote, time travelers are among us, exclamation point.
Called it.
Quote, Planet X, Nibiru, hard evidence.
I don't think that evidence is that hard.
Quote, alien implant found in Napoleon's skull, exclamation point.
Okay, I like the exclamation point. That one might even require two.
And this one's a little tougher. Quote, the riddle of the Jews, the most profound mystery in the world.
I don't know. I know that's going to be bad.
I went. Read, I know that's going to be bad, it, and it's bad.
I know that one's going to be bad. That one, that of all the headlines, that one is the most ambiguous about whether or not, like, you could see it fall one way or the other, but you know it's going to be bad.
It's bad.
It's going to be bad.
It's not good.
The riddle of the Jews. Jesus.
It's very anti-Semitic. It's very.
Oh man.
So and then there's a bunch of coverage about how the Boston bombing is a false flag, and a lot of links to Alex's coverage of it. This is part of that ecosystem,
yeah.
Before It's News. So there's an essential problem with saying that the finishing line of the marathon was at 666 Boylston. And that is the fact that by definition, the finish line spans the entire street. Thus, if one side were at 666 Boylston, the other side would have to be maybe 665 Boylston or 667. There isn't, you know.
Yeah.
This all traces back to a purported Google Earth image that I'm 90% sure is photoshopped. Here's the reason I think that.
Okay.
The image shows a marker saying 666 Boylston in the middle of the street, in the center lane of traffic. And it's indicating that the center of traffic has an address.
Right.
The street itself does not have an address. The buildings do. So it seems strange to me that the street would be showing up as having a physical street address. The second issue I have is if you look at Google Maps now and you consult the street view, you can easily find the finish line of the marathon. Regardless of whether or not it's marathon season, that line is always painted on the street. And if you look at the side of the street that's evenly numbered, you'll find that the marathon's finish line is pretty closely matched up with the Boston Public Library, whose address is 700 Boylston Street. The building immediately next to it appears to possibly be a different building, but it's actually just an extension of the Boston Library known as the McKim Building. It's easily identifiable by its inscription on the side of the building. Quote, the Commonwealth requires the education of the people as the safeguard of order and liberty. Ironic, in some ways, based on these people being so dumb spreading these theories.
Yeah.
The McKim Building is the home of a lot of, like, research collections, and it's a goddamn gorgeous piece of architecture, particularly inside. Oh, looks so cool. The McKim Building's physical address is 230 Dartmouth Street, as the main entrance is on the intersecting street, Dartmouth.
Sure, sure, sure.
There is no 666 Boylston Street. These conspiracy theorists could say the finish line is near 665 or 667 Boylston Street, but they know that sounds weak as shit, so they just pretend that this is a real address and it means something.
You're mistaking it, okay? That is in the middle of the street, because what's directly underneath 666 Boylston Street mm-hmm. is hell.
Okay.
That's the physical address of hell, and it's in the middle of the street. That happens.
Everyone knows that hell is actually underneath the WWE ring.
Yeah,
where, like,
oh, wow,
Kane drags
fair.
People down
that's
there
fair.
To the hell.
Right, right, right. Well, they have a system of tunnels.
Yeah, they pop Kane or, you know, the other supernatural characters yeah. will pop up and drag yeah, yeah. someone down under the ring. And,
yeah, demons are a lot like gophers.
Yeah, yeah. yeah so yeah. it can't be under Boylston Street, no. unfortunately. Good theory, but we know it's the WWE
no
ring.
No manhole there, nothing? Ah, shit.
So this is nothing more than bullshit promoted by a completely crackpot website and then amplified by Alex. Probably one of the least harmful instances of this whole thing, but stupid nonetheless. And you'd only be doing shit like this if you wanted to create unnecessary suspicion about bullshit.
That's like people using the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles address as like 224 and an eighth? What is that? How can I find that?
Like the pizza delivery
yeah,
guy?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex is deepening his expressions of how fucking pissed off he is that no one's giving him credit for breaking these pictures ahead of the DHS announcing their pictures, which are obviously the same.
It would be annoying.
And now I looked at Janet Napolitano. She looked like a deer in the headlights, like she was completely freaked out and on methamphetamine today during the congressional hearing where she said, we do have two photos of men of interest, the photos we showed you yesterday. I'm going to say that again. You know, the New York Times or CNN or Fox News said, hey, look at these photos we found. Don't these look suspicious? You know, they'll show you a guy on the roof all day and say, ooh, who is it? Who could it be? Because there it's all blurred and you can't tell. But for a day, there are these photos and videos and none of them will show it until the government says, now it's okay to show this. And they show you some photos that we already showed you. And no one gives us credit. Instead, there are hundreds of hit pieces saying I'm crazy and dangerous yesterday and today. You know why I'm crazy and dangerous?
Yes.
Because I've got my head screwed on, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not stupid.
This is really sad, in hindsight, but it makes sense, like, how he could trick people into thinking this in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, it's the next day when the FBI has actually released the pictures, this looks really, stupid. This looks like a child thinking he's right about something and mad that everyone's saying he's wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And actually kind of illustrates why people would write hit pieces about him being irresponsible.
Because
you were wrong about this.
Right.
You were, putting undue focus on private citizens, in a way that's deeply, dangerous.
Yeah. We'll give you credit for fucking the shit up, but, you were not right about anything.
Right. So you get that pat on the head.
Yeah. No kidding.
So it's not only that now Janet Napolitano, the DHS, all of them have come out with the same pictures that Alex has been reporting on for a day. They're also now apparently in the congressional record.
Okay.
And it looks like the Patsy, when you see the explosion, he runs with his clothes half blown off like a cartoon character. You know, when Yosemite Sam has the bomb go off. That's what it really looks like when a bomb goes off close to you. You see him running, probably set up. That's probably their suspect. They had him at the courthouse. They were going to roll him out, and they canceled it. And again, this is not my speculation. I told you yesterday that these are the photos of the Saudis. And then now, today, it's in congressional hearings, the photos of the Saudis.
The congressional hearing is the Janet Napolitano speaking with the Homeland Security Committee in the House. But these pictures weren't released then. She just discussed that there were pictures that they had. So this is just Alex yelling about nothing. Just, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
But on our last episode on the 17th, Alex had Steve Pachanik on to commit treason.
Right. And specifically for that purpose, I assume.
Yeah. It was partially that, but also to give the motive for the false flag.
Right.
And now we see the next day that Alex is just parroting that, the exact same motive that Steve Pachanik gave him. Alex is using it.
Also, 2 days ago, a congressional bipartisan commission said there was a systematic order of torture, including children, by Bush and by Obama, and a deliberate attempt to cover it up and continue to order the military to engage in hardcore Class A felonies, punishable by death, by the way. I mean, that is the punishment for torturing people to death, including children.
Again, this wasn't a bipartisan congressional report that came out. It was made by a non-governmental organization called the Constitution Project, which is funded. This specific report was funded by grants from the Rockefellers and the Open Society Soros Foundation.
Right.
This is all a lot of bullshit, but Alex is using it. He's using it as, like, they needed to get that out of the headlines. That's why they did this false flag. You see all the pieces coming into place.
Yeah.
You get the answers for the why, the how, the who. And he needs to do it because he's running out of time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where you get your ingredients if it helps you make a good soup.
Yep. And, it's just the thing that's such a bummer about this is, like, it's so easy to see through.
Yeah.
If you just look at it.
Yeah.
But it also is, like, I can project back to that time when there's not a lot of information available. It's such an easy thing to manipulate people about.
Right.
It's such a dangerous, space to have large groups of people in this high anxiety, high tension, state.
Yeah. You're
scary.
Like, even if you would normally otherwise be able to see directly through this for the transparent bullshit that it is, in a fucking emotional overridden state, it's just going to hit you before you can really do that. You've got a mist over your eyes. You know, you've got the fog of war going on over your eyes, that kind of situation.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to the same thing where it's like cult recruitment is a lot easier with people who are in vulnerable states
in
their
life. Right.
Like you just have a breakup or, you know, something like that. You get kicked out of your house. Mm-hmm. Your parents kick you out. It's much easier for nefarious groups to come in and attack. And in the same way, I think it would, like, I can see how it would be so easy for people to be seduced with Alex's conspiracy bullshit that, again, like, all of this is not based on anything except him looking at pictures and being like, ah, that's what that guy is.
Right.
You know, it's, this is the perfect time for something like this to happen. The ingredients are so
right
for him. And it's, I think that's a lot of the part of why looking at this makes me really anxious is because, like, you can see the variables there. You can see Alex behaving in such a way as he, like, to suggest that he's aware of that too. Like, to suggest that he knows that this is when the tide is coming in and I have to act.
Yeah, I mean, but that's been borne out probably throughout his entire career.
I'm sure it has.
After every tragedy is his moment to strike.
I'm sure it has, but this is on another level.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And it feels so clear.
Yeah.
In a way that other ones that we've looked at haven't been.
Yeah.
And it's, So the government and the media and the globalists, they're in crisis right now because Alex has busted their whole game. And, this clip is stupid.
See, the government right now is having a come to Jesus moment because they all play it being tough. They all play it being evil. You know, they all play it, you know, doing hardcore stuff, but, you know, becoming evil to guard good and that old Machiavellian lie of guard the truth with lies and be more evil than the devil to protect good. You don't protect good. You become the devil.
Sure.
And you lose providence when you do that. You lose God's hedge of protection. It's a curse on our land to have these leaders.
Would you say that you lose the mandate of heaven?
You know, that's kind of bestowed on a very touch and go basis.
Would you say that the leaders lose the mandate of heaven? Or you say the hedge of God's protection?
I suppose. I suppose.
It's funny that Alex now seems to think that's a Chinese thing that Pat Robertson is indoctrinating people with, and it seems very consistent for him.
Well, the hedge thing is more of a green thumb scenario, so
perhaps
Chinese don't own green thumbs.
So in this next clip,
do they?
I don't know. Okay. So Alex, in this next clip, he teases that he's got a message for the globalists,
sure,
because he knows that they're listening, and this is kind of fun. But also, I should tell you, he never gives his message to the globalists.
And later, at the start of the next hour, I want to talk to the globalist. I thought about this morning in a moment of clarity. I have a message. I have a message to the globalist that we're going to be going over and getting to.
He doesn't get to that message, but, I mean, you could argue that this entire thing is, you know.
Kind of his message.
Yeah. But he never sits down and is like, all right, here's what I want to say to you.
Right.
This Sunday.
In a moment of clarity, my first thought was, I'm a monster who should be destroyed. And my next thought was, here's what I need to say to the globalists.
I should talk shit on the globalists.
Yep.
So Alex believes that he starts spinning into a little bit of religious stuff throughout this episode.
Sure.
And one of the things he discusses is the fact that he has guardian angels and he is literally unkillable.
And I don't mean to get off into mumbo jumbo. That's not what it is, ladies and gentlemen. But it's real. I have guardian angels. And the New World Order cannot kill me unless God decides it's time for me to die. You understand that? I cannot be killed until God decides. And my whole life, incredible things have happened.
That's pretty wild.
I mean, based upon his interpretation of the Bible, that is true regardless of whether or not he has any kind of heavenly protection.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, somewhat. Everybody's date and time is predetermined by God.
Right. But I don't know if that's like what he's saying. I feel like there's more behind it than that.
Right.
There's like a, he's bulletproof until.
No, I understand.
Because he's here on a mission from God.
Right.
And I'm totally fine with the idea that people have like vague notions about guardian angels and stuff. Like, we've all had close calls that'll be like, whoa. Like afterwards, like, holy shit, I should be dead.
Yeah.
And if you want to believe that that's divine protection, I don't care. That's your prerogative. However, I think that the way that Alex is framing this is super fucked up. For one, he's making it a thing where God has to decide in order for him to even be killable. anything that anyone could possibly do to him wouldn't work, since God and the angels are protecting him. That's all good and well, but if he really believed that, then why would he be so obsessed with guns? Why would he constantly talk about how many guns he keeps in the studio? Shouldn't he be comfortable in the fact that even if someone broke into InfoWars HQ with a gun, they wouldn't be able to do anything because he has God's protection? The question gets even weirder when you consider that Alex now employs round-the-clock bodyguards who are allegedly ex-Blackwater employees. Why would Alex need mercenaries to protect him if any attack against him wouldn't work? The only way to make this make sense is if Alex knows that he doesn't have God's protection. He knows that what he's doing is evil. And while it works really well to pay lip service to this idea of God having made me an indestructible warrior, deep down, he knows that he's manipulating people and is a force for bad in the world. File this, Jordan, under the heading of more possible evidence that Alex did join up with those Satanists when he was a child.
Yeah, I do think that might be the case.
Yeah.
As always, God helps those who shoot other people. That's how the saying goes, right?
I suppose so. Really, like, the only way to make that make sense is if he wouldn't have these bodyguards and be obsessed with arming himself to the teeth.
Yeah.
If he felt he had divine protection, he would be all about, nonviolence and, walking through life untouchable.
Like Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would be more like Jesus or the Christ or, you know, the professed leader of his religion.
I'm sure he does have some like oil paintings of God with like an AK in his house. I would assume that he does.
Yeah.
So Alex gets to talking about Dan Bedondi, who, as we heard on the last episode, and I believe even the one before that, has gone to Boston, and he is an official InfoWars employee. He's there with an InfoWars mic. He's yelling InfoWars.com at everybody.
Right.
And trying to disrupt these press conferences that the mayor of Boston and the authorities are trying to give to calm the public and to help them get whatever information out is known and determined by these investigations. So Alex gets to playing this the clips of Dan Bedondi's up till this point work at press conferences. But it takes him forever to get to it because he can't stop talking about the footage.
And this is Dan Bedondi. You see it from his perspective at the camera with the governor and the police commissioner and the mayor and the ATF head all looking at him like they want to kill him instantly. See, if in criminology, if somebody doesn't recognize what you're saying, I've had cops question me before and FBI and Secret Service, and they're watching to see when they show me something if I automatically recognize it. And they're sitting there watching to see if I have to remember it. That's basic police work. And the minute Bedondi asks him, they jolt when he says the drill and the false flag, and their eyes all come alive, and they swing around and start, I mean, guilty as sin, guilty as a pig, and you know what? Now, it doesn't mean they did the bombing. It means they know about the drill. They've been told shut up, and the governor looks like, goes from being the fake smiley guy like he is at the memorial service to instantly in battle mode. His eyebrows go up. His teeth almost show. I mean, he, oh, yeah.
No, he doesn't. He literally just says, no, next question.
Yeah.
He doesn't get mad, nothing like that.
But does he almost show his teeth, Dan?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I went and watched Dan Bedondi's POV video of the press conference, and they don't show anything close to what Alex is describing. If you go and watch them, you'll see, if anything, an exceeding level of patience being displayed towards Dan Bedondi. They don't kick him out, even though he's clearly being disruptive and making accusations, as opposed to asking questions. Governor Patrick does not almost show his teeth in rage, to answer your question.
Okay.
Honestly, the best you could argue, based on the footage, is that he expresses slight annoyance. This is really important to Alex's narrative, though. No matter what response Dan Bedondi got, Alex was going to frame it as these officials being caught with their hand in the cookie jar. It's really a very basic propaganda trick. You go and send some annoying asshole to go yell at a press conference, and you have a pretty high likelihood of him causing a scene. If he gets thrown out, you can argue that they can't handle the truth. If the officials yell at him, you can make the same argument. I think Alex was kind of betting on something like that happening, and all Bedondi managed to provoke is the governor giving him a one-word answer to his question. Because there's nothing here, Alex has to go really overboard in characterizing the video, and it's honestly really pathetic.
Yeah.
Another important point here is that the video that Alex does end up showing is edited to make it look like the press conference ends in response to Bedondi's question, when in fact they've just cut out the officials responding to other people's questions. This, too, is a crucial piece of Alex's narrative. He needs to make it appear that they're so afraid of this question of false flags and the drill that they run away from planned press conferences to reinforce this narrative that Alex is pushing, that the information he's putting out is so dangerous and real. All of this is smoke and mirrors and edits, because they know damn well if they just played the raw footage of the press conference, Badondi would just look like a sad, loud loser who the adults are putting up with politely, and that doesn't work well for the narrative. You force the narrative. They're scared.
Yeah. That would be a good test of their gaslighting powers, is that could you play the full unedited video and coach people so well beforehand that when they watch it, they do see what it is you
yes.
think they want to see, right?
Yes.
Like, that's, of course you can do that.
Once the narrative's in place, that's
right.
what they'll see when they
right.
watch the video.
Even if they don't
most
see it.
Most likely.
Even if they don't see it, they'll say that they saw it. Like, it's almost like I'm surprised that they even bothered to edit the video.
Well, it makes it,
you know,
it makes it easier as a point of entry, because right now you can't show the, because it's not established nearly.
That's
enough
a good
at this
point. That's a good point. We're not going for just the diehards. We're trying to get new eyes on.
Alex this. Knows that his traffic.
Yeah.
He said on the last episode his traffic doubled.
Yeah.
He's trying to get people to do Google bombs where they like everybody search for false flags, so the analytics goes even higher.
Right,
it, when all of Alex's articles are tagged false flag and the meta tags and stuff like that. So obviously he knows that's going to drive more traffic to him.
Sure.
He's trying to do this. Yeah. It's a.
Yeah.
The full press conference would work with people who have already internalized the narrative.
Right.
But you need the edited version in order to get them to the point where they would internalize it. It helps. It's one of the only things that's like intersecting with the real world
yeah.
of this investigation is we have Dan Badondi yelling at people at press conferences.
Yeah.
It's such a crucial piece of the propaganda pageant that Alex is putting on that you need to edit it. But I do agree. I do agree that eventually you could just show the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't matter, but
well,
not
I mean,
at this point.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It is another really interesting difference between then and now where, you know, the president can admit to committing crimes and people will be like, nah, he didn't commit crimes. He just primes people to believe whatever it is he wants. And now in the present, when we're listening to Alex Jones, he's not really bothering with trying to attract, he's trying to attract new listeners as much as possible, but he's not bothering with trying to trick them. He's like, here's what you get.
He has some. I mean, we don't often end up listening to his clips that he plays of Trump, but they're often, you know, the parts that are most interesting to other folk are not included.
Are edited
in them.
Out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh, and
fair.
The times where he says incredibly stupid shit isn't included.
Okay.
So, I mean, there is still editing presentation to fit his narrative.
Okay.
For sure.
Right.
But I think your point also stands that he's probably less interested in the wide net appeal point. I think he probably recognizes in 2019 that boat sailed.
Yeah, the big tent is gone.
When in 2013 there was still some pretense of like, I could probably appeal to everyone.
Yeah.
So Alex is mad that the media won't show the photos that he broke a day before. Again, this is a recurring theme through this episode. They're just mad at the media. They're covering it up. They're controlled. The controlled media won't show the pictures that I broke.
The government isn't showing these photos. Why not show these photos, media? You'd think, hey, look at these photos Infowars.com has. Look at these photos of all these people. You showed me a guy on a roof. What about all these guys in doorways crouched suspiciously with big black bags right where the bomb went off? But it doesn't fit the narrative of the redneck. You were going to blame us for the bombing. I mean, I could see the whole buildup. And the controlled White House-run media, MSNBC and others, were saying, we told you it was going to be a white tea partier. It's a lone wolf. Homeland Security, that's all they'll say. They're getting ready. Ha ha. We got you, gun owners. We got you. We got you. You got us? As I know you're watching right now, all angry. Most of you are foreign intelligence operatives and globalists. You're
sure.
all stomping around right now at Media Matters and MSNBC, taping what I'm saying, hopping mad, probably, you know, imagine some papers have been thrown, and who got blown? Who got defeated? Who got exposed? Who? Tell me again. And I'm not taunting these people. I want them to understand they're going to be defeated.
So, I mean, it's important. It's, like, he even says it. I imagine papers are thrown. He's just fantasizing about what's going on and passing it off to his audiences. This is what's going. We're in a toe-to-toe battle with the media. It's so stupid.
I'm so used to it, but it is still incredibly annoying when these supposed powerful men whine and whimper so much. They do this all the time. Why isn't the media paying attention to me? Why don't I get all the coverage?
That's the flip side of Alex's narcissism.
Yeah.
Like that's the soft underbelly of it.
Well, they all do it, just whining all the time. Like, sure. I'm so powerful, and why doesn't anybody like me?
Yep, there is that dichotomy.
Ugh.
So this is something I delight in. A lot of this is really stupid. His coverage of the bombing. A lot of it is very intensive in terms of like figuring out where he's getting these ideas from and stuff like that. But every now and again, you find a nice oasis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. Alex decides to read a comment from an InfoWars article.
Oh no.
And he realizes in the middle of it, I shouldn't have started reading this comment. This is great. Mic down for this.
In our article on InfoWars.com, Obama covering up Saudi link to Boston bombing. I love the comment by Anonymous.
Real quick, just to point out, it's really important to he said he loves this comment.
He doesn't think it's actually anonymous.
No, I think it's, I think,
he
I,
knows, he knows it's
irrelevant.
Just an anonymous comment.
That's irrelevant.
Yeah,
I don't think that he thinks that.
Right.
The only important thing is he sets this up by saying, I love this comment.
Who commented at 11 a.m. Simple arithmetic. Guys, you can punch this up. Thank you. Simple arithmetic, my friends. One, orchestrate bombing on Patriots Day in city of original Boston Tea Party. Two, detonate bombs near the finish line at the end of the race where slow Caucasians trudged forth and not earlier when the Olympic caliber, and it goes on, we're also about to finish line. Three, create major news distractions.
Uh-oh, this dude's a racist. This comment is super racist. It's one of the things that I'm super pissed off about Alex being deplatformed. It's that, like, when the company that moderated his comments dropped him, all the comments disappeared from InfoWars. Like, all the articles.
Yeah.
I can find this article that Alex is talking about, but there's just no comments on it. I can even pull it up in the Wayback Machine, but comments don't populate anymore. I really wanted to track down this comment because I wanted to know if the commenter used the N-word. That's my only question.
Yeah.
You could totally hear Alex realize that he started reading an explicitly racist comment. And, you know, he started off by saying, I love this comment. And he realizes I'm in trouble.
Yep.
There's nothing funnier than Alex saying, quote, Olympic caliber. And it goes on. It goes on. It's so stupid. Alex,
did he say that they were going to put it up on the screen?
They may have. I don't know. I can't find video of this.
Wild.
But it's like Alex thinks he can just edit out the parts of things he's reading that create problems for him by saying it goes on. He tried that trick when he was reading that article about his fan who kidnapped his children so he wouldn't have to read the part about the guy tying up the kid's grandmother. And now he's clearly doing it so he won't have to draw attention to the fact that he introduced this clearly racist internet comment by saying he loved it. The only question I have is how racist it was. If it threw Alex for a loop, that makes me think it had to be really racist. I would bet it's N-word level racist.
Oh, yeah.
Either way, Alex realized that he was in a bit of a pickle since he said he loved the comment. So he tried to mask the comment's racism, but he made the mistake of keeping on reading. And here's what happens.
D, communist fascist takeover of USA by New World Order with closet homosexual, closet Muslim sociopath, foreign plan Obama as point man dictator. And again, I don't read that to be mean to gay people or something. I actually hadn't read the full comment. I thought I would just read one. This is kind of silly, but
I hadn't read it.
Sure, love this comment. I haven't read it.
Hear him giggling when the comment says that Obama's a closet homosexual. Like, don't pretend that you don't love this shit. It's so stupid. I love this comment. I hadn't read it.
Love this comment. N-word. Coward. N-word. N-word. N-word.
Fucking coward.
Maybe I'll start in the middle.
Oh shit. So that's the level of shit that's taking up some of his time, reading comments that he hasn't read that he finds out are racist in the middle of them.
I love this comment. It's titled, The Riddle of the Jews. How do we?
Right. Found this great article on Before It's News. Very insightful.
yeah.
So
30 white horses on a red hill.
I think that the fact that he's taking time to do shit like that should indicate that this next clip might not be accurate.
All right, if you're just joining us, this is the most historic radio broadcast in 18 years I've ever done. We received from Anonymous, and we did Google searches on the photos that confirmed they were from Twitter accounts and news stations that didn't know what they had. We received from Anonymous contact sent to Paul Watson, and we are in contact with the folks that sent us the information. They've asked that we not mention what hacker group they're with. We'll just say they're Anonymous. That they went out, and it's obviously intelligence people who don't like what's happening, that Navy SEALs were there at the event at the finish line all over the place with radiation detectors, black backpacks. We're talking 20 feet, max 20 yards, you know, between 20 and 60 feet from the bombers right there by the flags. There was a drill, which they've been caught lying about.
So the important thing here is that it's so important for him to paint this anonymous person or 4chan being his source intelligence operatives because it's such a hole in the narrative, and he needs to patch up that hole. It needs to come from some very legitimate, credible source, which is these anonymous good people within the intelligence community who are sick of the bullshit. Otherwise, closer analysis is, Alex, you just took this from a message board. What are you doing?
See, I can't understand how it is we're supposed to reconcile two things in the same sentence, which is, first, we Google searched it and it's been on a bunch of Twitter accounts already. And two, it was given to us directly by these intelligence officials.
The Googling and the Twitter accounts was after the fact, after the intelligence people had gathered all of those photos from all these disparate places and sent them to Alex in a data dump. In reality, Paul Joseph Watson was cruising 4chan,
right,
found these images, told Alex about it, and now they've created a backstory,
right,
for a better source for the information.
Right, 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 right.
It's not
annoying.
It's not professional work here.
No, it is not. It is not.
But Alex, I mean, it's a...
And the reality of that Google search is still... The jury's out.
It's debatable whether or not Alex knows how to perform that operation.
Right?
But he does know it's real, which is good. So here, file this next clip under the headline of Alex just constantly complaining that no one is, like, again, throwing him a parade for his awesome reporting.
This shows you how controlled the media is.
It's so controlled.
That only InfoWars.com and DrudgeReport.com are covering this. And the photos we released are the photos they were forced to then put out.
Nope.
The very photos
nope.
a day later.
Nope.
But they won't say, the media stands around to wait till the government gives them a photo and ignores, hey, who was right? Not, wow, good job. InfoWars.com, Paul Watson, Alex Jones, Matt Drudge, Matt Drudge's crew.
He's just so bent out of shape that no one is congratulating him for doing bad work.
Yep.
Like, obviously, it's just insane.
But
like, it's so pathetic.
This is the first time he really believes he did good work, though.
I think you're right. I think that's really why he's responding this way.
Yeah, he's like, for real, guys, look, I know.
Yeah.
We both know what's been going on.
I mean,
but this time I did it!
He always wants a parade, but the extent to which he is, like, so focused on no one giving him credit, it does have a different feel to it than a lot of other times, which is wild. So Alex starts faking hyperventilating on air in order to sort of sell the illusion that this is, like, real serious times.
Sure, sure.
And in the process ends up making a ludicrous statement.
Of course.
I'm having so many butterflies that I'm actually hyperventilating on air, okay? I mean, that's how big this is. Because this is like catching people, again, burying the dead bodies on film in the backyard. This is open and shut, smoking gun. You call in all these people, you ask who ordered them to do what, you'll find out who was in charge, you'll find out who was handling who, you'll find out who did this and who blew up the marathon. I mean, we're sitting here, this will destroy the globalist.
So it's an open and shut case, man.
We caught video.
Do you agree?
We caught video of them burying the bodies in the backyard.
Do you agree that this is open and shut?
I don't think there's any other conclusion I could draw based on the evidence he's provided.
This case is not open and shut. Let me explore with you here some of the things you'd need to do, even if you're going to listen to the way Alex is saying, like, first you get these people,
sure,
ask them who's running what.
Right.
Even these steps are still needed to prove his case, even if he's right, which he's not. First, you got to figure out who these people are in these photos. Alex's crack team still hasn't put any names to anyone, and this anonymous intelligence agent he imagined is contacting him doesn't seem to know who any of these people are, so that seems like it's still a hurdle that needs to be hurdled. So that's a problem.
The globalists remove people's names whenever they become operatives. Next.
Then, once you figure out who these people are, if they're willing to submit to an interview, you can ask them questions, but there's no guarantee that any of them are going to talk to you. That could be a difficulty. If let's pretend that Alex is the cops and one of these people says, I want a lawyer. Alex seems to imagine he could just take these out-of-context pictures to a judge and then just keep saying, come on, at them until they give you a subpoena or some shit.
Part of the globalist deal with the devil is that if you get caught, you have to tell the truth. It's a reverse. The police have to tell you the police situation. Next.
Then, imagining somehow you compel these people to talk, what if you interview them and they say that no one was ordering them to do anything? What evidence do you have that they're lying? If guys like Alex thinks are Marine Special Ops just said, we were at the marathon and you think we look weird, what evidence is going to provide to contradict them? This would be a disaster of a case to try and prove anywhere except for InfoWars.
Right.
This fantasy bullshit where Alex has just decided all of these connections that he's making in his head exist in the real world really is scary. It's very scary if you imagine that he means all of this. You know, like,
yeah,
this is an open and shut case. Like, it's not. You haven't proved anything.
Yeah. Based on his numerous lawsuits and the like, it's almost like he really doesn't understand any of the laws or how court works.
No.
Like, he just doesn't have any concept of it.
Nope. I think that might be a function of him always having really shady lawyers.
Yeah. That's true.
So we get back now to this sort of theme throughout the episode of Alex wanting a parade for his great work.
Sure.
And then there's a sort of break in the story that isn't a break.
You notice no media is going, wow, Alex Jones, of all people, got the photos of who they say they're looking for now. Why didn't the media, over several days, and you think I'm so busy, you think I'd be looking at this stuff close. And it was all hiding in plain view in front of everyone. Dude just came in here during the break. That's why I'm hyperventilating with a stack of new high-def photos and stills out of the city of Boston surveillance footage. And it shows the handlers of the Saudis. And you can see the body language, all of it. And again, people say, oh, you're just speculating. Oh, I told you who they would be forced to release with the Saudis. I told you the Navy SEAL stuff, that's now all over the place.
It's not all over the place. Like, it's not. It's in the shit media online.
Yeah.
And the New York Post cover.
Yeah.
However, it's important to point out that the Post didn't get the image that they used from the same source that Alex is pulling from. Though they're guilty of a similar journalistic crime, they were at least operating off bogus emails from actual law enforcement, reporting bad information that they didn't thoroughly vet, whereas Alex is getting random pictures from 4chan and writing a story about them. Because Alex gets all of his news from websites that are completely full of shit and sensational nonsense, he naturally thinks that the entirety of the media is talking about the same things he was covering already, and that he was way ahead of them. It's just because he's conflated these things. He saw the Post cover, and he also heard that Janet Napolitano had announced that the FBI was going to release pictures of the suspects. He doesn't realize that the FBI has not yet released these images, so he's most likely assuming that the Post cover is in fact the release of the suspect pictures. The men on the cover were Moroccan, but Alex is dumb and racist, so he assumes all brown people are basically the same. So he thinks that this picture is of Saudi Arabians who were at the marathon, who are the new patsies, now that he's blown up the hillbilly angle. He's further conflated the Saudi student who was injured in the bombing and an unrelated Saudi student who was taken in by ICE for not registering for classes and turned them into the same person in order to suggest that the Saudi Arabian patsy is going to be taken out of the country, and that's what this meeting Obama had with the Saudi foreign minister was about. It's really interesting because all the faulty steps he makes in his reporting are pretty clear if you just listen to him and have some distance from the actual event. It's super easy in 2019 to see the glaring holes here and how he so eagerly fills them in with the narrative of his own design. But in April 2013, it'd be fucking hard to concretely point out these lies.
Yeah.
You could say, I don't know if that makes sense. You couldn't say like, oh no, here's,
That's demonstrably untrue.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of information going around. There's a climate of fear and anxiety, and the way he so confidently makes these dumbass assertions is seductive. It's really one of the worst parts about looking at this stretch of time, seeing how dumb what he's saying is, but seeing how easy it would be to be convinced that there's something to it. I know I'm saying that kind of consistently and repeatedly because I think it's an important idea. I think it's, as we go through this, like, it's important to not lose track of the climate and how people's emotions were at that time. Right. And how he's willingly and aggressively manipulating them.
Yeah, I think he gave up the game on that clip because he said, the media isn't saying Alex Jones, of all people, is correct on this. That of all people means he knows. Because he generally presents himself as being 100% correct all the time. So what it should be is they are forced now. He's like, now they're forced to admit I'm correct.
Yeah.
As opposed to him saying Alex Jones, of all people, because we both know the deal.
Well, that
of all people, it turns out I'm correct this time.
That could be the case, or he could be expressing that he's aware that the media hates him. And so they would be saying, of all people, we hate him, but he's right about this.
Right.
It's possible. Yeah. Either one is a possible reading of
it. I suppose.
So Alex gets into a fantasy here about how this white patsy that he's found in these pictures is probably being tortured. Like, it's
the
great.
Only white patsy I know is from Jessica Jones. All right.
Patsy Cline.
Yeah.
So he just has this fantasy about this dude being tortured. And it's kind of gross.
There's video and photos of it all. There's video of undercover police, it looks like, leading the mentally ill. That's what the guy looks like to me. Body language, all of it. Leading up the poor patsy, who probably thought he was a secret agent now. He looks so proud to be on Team America. He doesn't know he's going to be drugged up and rolled out as the new McVeigh. And going to be electroshocked, tortured, drugged up for trial. Just like all the other patsies, it's so horrible. And you know what? The operation was blown for you. This is unprecedented. So now they're going to say, oh, maybe it's Saudis. Oh, we sent them back to Saudi Arabia. Never mind. Oh, we met with the Saudi foreign minister, emergency meeting. We canceled the press conference, blah, 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 on and on and on. They do not want this out. They do not want this discussed. They do not want you talking about it. They do not. They needed to blame the Patriot Tea Party for this so bad.
Oh, no. You needed the appearance of them blaming.
It would have been so good.
Because he keeps talking about this, and I can't really find a lot of good evidence that people were blaming right-wing, white, patriot folk.
Yeah.
And he keeps saying that they're all over the media saying it, and he doesn't play any clips of that. I went to InfoWars. I can't find any articles of them demonstrating that.
Yeah.
I think it's just the fact that he's built that up as
it needs to be true.
The narrative that they are doing this is now established, and he's reporting on his own perceptions from previous days. I don't think that the media needed to do that. I think he needed that.
Yeah.
It's gross. And all that stuff about this dude is just imagined.
Yeah.
All of it is just, he saw a couple of still images of this guy and has decided that he's mentally handicapped. He's decided that he got enlisted by you're going to be a hero.
Yeah.
All of that is made up. It has nothing to do with any reality that he can point to, like anything other than his fantasies.
Right.
That is it.
I'm always, because he ascribes everybody's traits to their appearance. Like always, if he thinks somebody is bad,
Hillary looks like a demon.
They look like demons, like all of that shit. I am always curious of what it is he would describe himself as looking like in the mirror. Like I would, in the same way that I want specifics on
a heroic cowboy Calvin Klein model who's just put on a little bit too much weight because he's been busy fighting the globalists.
Right, it has to be something like that, right?
That is how he describes himself.
But how? How could you possibly see that? Like, that's something that fascinates me, is like what it is that his eyes, I want to see what he sees.
I'd rather not.
Like, I want to know if there are pink elephants flying through the air. Like, I want to know.
There's always carnival music playing in his head. I should correct myself. Alex doesn't just fantasize and have his own ideas about them blaming the Patriots. He also has evidence.
I mean, that's why Gary Hart on the CFR commission wrote public letters and a paper saying we need staged terror attacks, just like PNAC did the September 20th Rebuilding America's Defenses thing. And then We Are Change, it's in my film Truth Rising, found him at an event. He was at a book signing and came up and said, you wrote those letters and put up that public report, you know, saying we staged terror attacks in America and that we should do it again. And he goes, no, I didn't. What are you talking about, son? They go, well, here's your letter. And when he read it, he started sweating and going, oh, well, I, that was a mock letter. I, well, see, they don't even think of us as human. You publish this stuff in the CFR. You publish this stuff publicly, and we're not supposed to go with a copy of it?
So this Gary Hart letter.
Let's find out about this Gary Hart letter.
This is some sloppy bullshit. So I can't find a clip of what Alex is talking about with him sweating and freaking out, mostly because I'm not willing to watch Truth Rising just to find some context for what he's talking about, Gary Hart's reaction. I'm certain that Alex is embellishing and misrepresenting Gary Hart's reaction, but none of that really matters. On 911truth.org, there's an article about this letter that Gary Hart wrote. The first thing that's important to point out is that this letter wasn't written for the CFR or anything like that. Even if Gary Hart was a member of the CFR, it was an op-ed he wrote for the Huffington Post in September 2007.
Okay.
The letter is titled, quote, Unsolicited Advice for the Government of Iran. And one thing that's important to point out is at this point in 2007, things were not good between the U.S. and Iran. In January of that year, the U.S. had raided the Iranian liaison office in Iraq, which was serving as the de facto consulate. And they took five consular officers hostage, which they wouldn't release these dudes until July 2009. Shit was super tense, and Hart's letter exists within that context.
Was Iran taking unsolicited advice at that time, or
I'm not sure if they were reading the HuffPo.
I don't think they. I don't think that was their main.
His unsolicited advice to Iran was that the U.S. does not go to war unless it's provoked. But
sure,
but but sometimes it seems like certain more hawkish elements like to provoke provocation. But it's important to point out what he's talking about is not false flags necessarily. He's talking about advising Iran to avoid giving someone like Dick Cheney the excuse he's dying to find to justify going into another war. From the letter, quote, you would probably be well advised to keep your forces, including clandestine forces, as far away from the Iraqi border as you can. You might even consider bringing in some neighbors to verify that you're not shipping arms next door. Tone down the rhetoric on Zionism. You've established your credentials with those in your world who thrive on that. If it makes you feel more powerful to hurl accusations at the American Eagle, have at it. Sticks and stones, etc. But for the next 16 months or so, you should not only provocative actions, you should not seem to be doing so. For the vast majority of Americans who seek no wider war in the Middle East or elsewhere, don't tempt fate. Don't give a certain vice president we know the justification he's seeking to attack your country.
Yeah.
This letter in no way is saying we do false flags and we should do more of them. That's an absurd misrepresentation of the message that Hart was expressing. But that shouldn't be too surprising at this
point.
Right.
I remember, I specifically remember the next day when the Ayatollah had a unsolicited letter to Gary Hart in the HuffPost that just said, who are you?
Yeah.
And that was it.
He actually thought he was Corey Hart.
Yeah.
The guy who's like, I wear my sunglasses at night.
Yeah.
So that letter made no sense.
Yeah, no, it was weird.
Stop wearing sunglasses at night. So in this next clip, Alex loses his mind, yelling, all of this is bullshit. Just keep that in mind as we
okay.
listen to this.
All right.
Like, you think we're animals like all these other people? You think I don't see? You don't think I don't know? You want to raise my property taxes and gut the Second Amendment and take my kids from me? And you say the state runs my kids on MSNBC? You don't think we're not going to fight you? You don't think we don't know you're going to blow stuff up and try to blame us? You don't think we're not watching now, you rat bastards? You don't think there's not fight left around here? Not all of us are in comas watching TV, buddy. Not all of us are busy, you know, down at the bar watching UFC, looking tough in front of our buddies.
Uh-oh.
Not all of us are here to be run over. Not all of us are fake men. You know how slime, I've got countless clips of CNN, MSNBC, even yesterday going, you know it's gun owners did this. You know they use powder from the gun shops to do it. I mean, I even predicted that.
He does not play those clips, but.
Surprise.
That clip right there is nothing more than performative masculinity.
Yeah.
There is no passion behind any of that. That was completely artificial. And most importantly, nothing he's saying is true. Like I said, he's yet to play any of these clips of CNN or any other media outlets salivating at the thought of this bombing being a gun owner and right winger. And nothing I could find on his website seems to prove that at all. He's just playing his role. And he's seeing that it's working. Like, his traffic is way up, so he's leaning hard into being the guy who knows everything about the bombing and is willing to fight you over it. But unfortunately, He's living on borrowed time because in reality, he knows that he hasn't predicted anything.
Yeah.
The thing I find particularly interesting there is how he said that he predicted that the globalists would ban powder from the gun shops there at the end of the clip. He didn't predict that. If you recall, that came from a 4chan post that he read on air, which he was trying to present as a troll post, which he started agreeing with as he read it. If anything, he should be saying, they're blaming the powder from the gun shops. You heard me convinced by a troll post that that was going to happen. But that doesn't quite sound as good.
It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
Not really.
No.
So now in 2019, I can look back and confidently say that they didn't outlaw powder, nor did anyone seriously propose the idea. Shit, the bombs were made from fireworks, and you can still get fireworks in most places. And the places you can't didn't ban them because of the Boston bombing. They did because some kid lost an arm a decade ago, and the city council voted you have to drive outside city limits to get fireworks.
Yeah. Nothing, that solved it.
Nothing Alex is saying is real. This is all just performance presented as truth because he knows his traffic is up and he knows what makes him interesting.
Right.
It's this sort of bullshit yelling, overconfidence, I'm right about everything, I've predicted all this shit. He knows that that's the honey that he can get people drawn in with.
I always like when he adds those tiny little personal annoyances that like going to the bar and watching UFC is fairly specific.
He's mad at Rogan.
Like there's a, you know, he's referencing somebody in particular.
Rogan,
like,
won't have him on his podcast.
Like it reminds me a little bit of Dante's Inferno whenever he creates all of these specific hells and he populates them with people
all
that he knows.
Rivals.
He's like, this motherfucker right here.
Yeah.
All the globalists are like this asshole. Dave, I hate Dave.
All the globalists are, rather you be watching UFC like Joe. Like, the random name.
Random.
Joseph.
Pick it out of the hat.
Yeah. It does feel that way, maybe.
Some job.
But it also.
Call it comedian or whatever.
It also falls in line with his, like, anger at, sublimating masculinity, like
football
and stuff.
Of course.
But, I mean, who cares? He's just talking shit. So anyway, Alex says in this next clip that there were Democratic fundraising letters that he found that were going around that were saying, we need another Oklahoma City bombing.
Sure.
And this isn't true.
I mean, you people are running around in Democratic fundraising letters saying to your million-dollar donors, don't worry, there'll be a new Oklahoma City. We're going to win our agenda. Your money's well spent with us. Even letting their donors in, like, don't worry, we're going to blow stuff up. I mean, I have to sit here and watch you, these psychos on power trips reading their teleprompters on MSNBC going, you know, all the twinkly eyes of just criminal energy just going, and you know it's NRA that did this bombing and we're going to get these people. I mean, just over the top authoritarian scum.
Still yet to play any of those clips. So I can't find any evidence that there were ever any Democratic fundraising emails that said things like, don't worry, there's going to be another Oklahoma City bombing. There's literally no way I believe that such a thing could exist without being plastered all over every single right-wing media site online. I would imagine that what's being misrepresented here is that some organization, maybe even the SPLC, sent out a fundraising email that discussed the growing threat of right-wing terrorism, not as a positive thing, but as a thing that they make it their business to keep an eye on. It would make sense for them to raise money by pointing out that, you know, as the Tea Party movement has grown, the more dangerous militia communities have grown along with it, reaching levels unseen since the mid-90s, which did lead to the Oklahoma City bombing. That would make total sense for them. And Alex's track record is littered with him misrepresenting things like that, so I would probably assume that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, if they sent that an actual, if they literally sent that actual thing as a real thing, we would still be hearing it from all of these
and
people.
And the evidence of it would be everywhere.
Yeah, every day we would still be hearing, see how evil the SPLC is? Like, every day.
Yeah. The closest I can find to this is a couple of comments that people made that were saying that Obama needed a unifying moment to save his presidency back in 2010. In one instance, Mark Penn said in an appearance on Hardball, quote, remember President Clinton reconnected with Oklahoma, right? And the president right now seems removed. It wasn't until that speech that Clinton really clicked with the American public. Obama needs a similar thing. This isn't saying that Obama needs a new Oklahoma City bombing to save his presidency. It's saying that Clinton reconnected with the American public in that speech that he gave after the bombing, and Obama needs to similarly reconnect. It's not about the terrorist attack, it's about the speech. The other instance was Robert Shapiro saying in an article in the Financial Times, quote, the bottom line here is that Americans don't believe in President Obama's leadership. He has to find some way between now and November of demonstrating that he's a leader who can command confidence, and short of a 9/11 event or an Oklahoma City bombing, I can't think of how he could do that. You could read that as a guy saying that Obama better fake a terrorist attack soon, or you could read it as a political commentator using an extreme example to express how bad a situation Obama was in at the time. Mark Penn's comment came a couple of days after the 2010 midterms, when the GOP won back control of the House and gained 6 seats in the Senate, effectively putting a halt to most of the hope that Obama had of having a cooperative Congress. So you can kind of see how a political commentator might see the prospects right then of not being good. Then Shapiro's comment literally says, quote, between now and November. And that's referencing that he said this right before the 2010 midterms.
Yeah.
Shapiro is articulating that there's a rising tide within conservatism happening at the same time that Obama's approval ratings were falling. And it didn't look good for him. So he's probably going to get battered at the midterms. And he did.
Yeah.
The only way to read either of these comments as expressing the need for some fake terrorist attack is if you're already convinced that that's what the people are saying.
God. I can't even think about 2008 to 2010. I just can't think about it.
You shouldn't.
Like, if I think about it hard enough to, like, Obama, we had a Democratic president, super majorities in the House and Senate, and the astonishing amount of power you can see now is just welled by 37 senators.
Yeah.
It's like, we could have, imagine if Bernie had been president.
Don't even think about
it. Oh, I can't think about it.
So while I can't find any evidence about a Democratic fundraising email or letter similar to what Alex is saying, I should tell you that I did find a fundraising letter sent out by then executive vice president of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, 6 days before the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995.
Hey guys, we're about to blow up the Oklahoma. Yeah.
The letter painted federal agents as thugs out to, quote, harass, intimidate, and even murder law-abiding citizens.
Right.
According to an article in the Christian Science Monitor about the letter, quote, Mr. LaPierre urges gun owners to take action before there's no freedom left in America.
Right.
Now, obviously, this letter didn't inspire Timothy McVeigh to blow up that federal building. We can be sure of that because of the timing. It just doesn't work out.
Yeah, it's not soon enough.
It's tough to get around the fact, however, that what initially comes off as exaggerated, bombastic advocacy for gun rights kind of looks like exactly the same ideology that inspired the bombing of a federal building a week later. Oh, and then I also found an article from the LA Times from April 28th, 1995, just after the Oklahoma City bombing. Listen to this damn headline. Quote, Oklahoma City after the bomb. Lobbyists stymie efforts to trace explosives, bombs, technology, such as the use of tiny chips and material to find blast origin has been around for years, but NRA others have blocked its usage. My first thought, that headline is unwieldy. Someone needed to take another pass at that.
Yeah, thing. The 90s were tough.
Yeah, pre-clickbait era.
Yeah, different time for headlines. Different time.
You see, though, there are these indestructible microscopic chips called Taggants that can be put in all explosives sold in this country that could very easily trace back any bombs used in attacks like this. In the 1980s, the Office of Technology Assessment did a study and found that implementing the use of Taggants, quote, could increase arrests related to bombings by as much as 75%. But you know what?
That's unilaterally a good thing, right? If people bomb stuff, we want to know who did it, right? That's a good thing.
The NRA was super against it.
I don't know why.
And they lobbied really hard against the move and ultimately defeated it.
I can't imagine why.
There are people who are like the group that represents explosives manufacturers were against it as well.
Of course.
But their reason was because they make explosives for like mining.
Of course.
That sort of thing. And demolition. And their position was that adding these Taggants could make the more volatile explosives, or there could be safety issues. Other people,
prove it.
Other people have studied it and said that it wouldn't.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of back and forth.
I
don't think that the NRA is above board on this.
No.
Anyway, when people talk about how the NRA is basically a terrorist organization,
these are
some of the reasons. Their rhetoric is indistinguishable from domestic terrorists, and their actions make it exceedingly difficult for law enforcement to solve crimes committed by domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
That's why people make those sorts of comments.
Yeah, it's like if ISIS was like, hey, don't investigate us. Oh, wait, no, it's exactly like that, because that's who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
So when Alex eventually does get around to saying that people are blaming the NRA, it might be that there is a news report about how the NRA blocked the efforts to put Taggants in explosives.
Sure.
I'm guessing that probably on MSNBC or CNN, there was a small piece about this history of advocacy that would have made solving this bombing probably super easy. But then again, I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if these tagants would have been put in fireworks as well.
Right.
So I don't know if it would have. But anyway, if anything, it was just a discussion of their advocacy for making bombings harder to track.
Yeah, that's a noble cause, Dan.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, in this next clip, Alex tries to make people more afraid.
There's high-def video and photo everywhere. They're now admitting that we were right, that we broke it, but not giving us credit. And it's hidden in plain view. I'll give the number out, open phones in the next hour, and then the gun grabbers throwing fits that they haven't gotten our guns yet. But don't worry. They've got schizophrenics on drugs, wound up, probably putting guns in their hands right now.
So the globalists are putting guns in the hands of crazy people that they've drugged up. They're going to come to your house. They're out there.
Well, obviously.
It's right now. This is happening. There's going to be more attacks because I've blown their operation sky high. Yep. Everyone admits that I'm right, but they won't say it's me. It's crazy. This is insanely irresponsible. So he says that the gun grabbers are freaking out. And one of his main pieces of evidence is that Harry Reid, in giving a speech, said that we don't need to be caught off track and get distracted by these black helicopter types who say there's false flags.
Naturally. So, of course, the black helicopter types who say there are false flags freaked the fuck out.
In Alex's introduction to talking about this, he accuses Harry Reid of throwing a fit.
There we go.
If you listen to this, he's giving a very calm speech that Alex throws a fit while listening to.
Sure.
This country and everything good in the world was founded on guts. And it was founded on telling the truth. And when you know evil's going on, you gotta not lie to yourself about it and rationalize and be all shaky and, oh, who knows? No, day one, I said, I saw the build up to this false flag. And this is exactly what it looks like now. And now Harry Reid is talking about false flags as he throws fits, saying that they've been unable to get our guns. Here's a clip of that.
We can keep them off the streets. We should
Stop
keep
shouting.
Them off the streets.
You got plenty of guns, don't
In
you, bud?
In the 1920s, organized crime was committing murders.
Oh, he's so loud.
Yeah, and that was used to restrict our guns.
He's throwing
Valentine,
a fit.
Valentine's Day massacre.
They still got them.
So Congress dramatically limited the sale and transfer of machine guns.
Yeah, full auto. You don't even need
Long
that.
Long time ago.
Yeah, a bunch of bull. He started to take our guns then, traitor.
As a result, machine guns basically disappeared from the streets. They're in movies, but not private citizens had them.
Yes.
We can and should make the same common sense approach.
Crime dropped 49% the last 20 years, punk.
Weapons of war. Assault weapons. That's why I will vote for Dianne
But
Feinstein's
you're a criminal who only wants the guns for yourself, punk.
Because we must strike a better balance between the right to defend ourselves and the right of every child in America to grow up safe from gun violence.
Like the ones that got blown up at the...
I'll vote for the ban because maintaining a law and order is more important than satisfying conspiracy theories.
You
scum. Who believe in black helicopters and false flags.
Oh! Turn him off. That's
I'll
enough
for
that punk.
Because...
Listen, we're getting to them. They don't like it. Full speed ahead. Intensify operations. Just discredit them. Every time you email one of our stories, every time you talk about false flags, every time you expose what they've done, every time you just bring them closer to defeat.
Again, the only sort of solution is give me free advertising.
Yeah.
Promote my shit. That's the only solution that we're advocating for. Go yell at people or whatever.
Right.
I mean, this is just further in that pattern that Alex has that, like, this is Harry Reid giving a very common sense, measured reaction. Alex can't allow that to stand. It's too sensible.
Yeah.
He's already portrayed it as him having a fit. So he has to keep interrupting it and yelling over the clip.
Otherwise, you'll realize he's not at all having a fit.
No, he's completely misrepresenting what this is. This is how Alex deals with content that he has to alter a little bit.
I mean, look, Alex, just to be clear, don't talk over clips to people who can't talk back. That's my job, and I'm better at it.
Oh boy, shots fired. So Alex said that they're putting guns in the hands of schizophrenics who are on drugs.
Sure.
And they're coming. And he continues that line here, saying that they're going to have to do another false flag now that Alex has blown up their original one.
They don't know what to do. They had the fake arrest. They were going to announce it was a gun owner. They had everything. And now it's all screwed up by the grace of God. You wanted to frame us, and now you can't. So better carry out another false flag real quick, huh? That's what you guys always do the same thing. So I've been thinking about what they'll do. They'll probably blow some more stuff up. And they might have set the fire at that thing up in Texas. And that's a perfect thing to get this out of the news.
What?
They're in total panic mode. I don't know that. I don't have evidence of that, so we don't know. But they do this kind of stuff, so they are prime suspects.
Sure.
Also, go to InfoWarsStore.com
oh.
and buy the books, the high-quality water filters at the lowest prices with promo code WATER for all the water products.
A rare 2013 ad pivot.
That was a high-quality ad pivot, too.
Yeah.
That one was a good one.
So in that clip, in the same breath, Alex is saying that he has no evidence or proof that the explosion in West Texas was a false flag by the globalists, but because he's decided that's how they operate, they're the prime suspects.
It's the type of thing the imaginary enemy I created who always does that always does.
That's demented thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Using that very same level of shoddy logic, I could just say that one of Alex's fans did that West Texas fertilizer plant fire.
It is the type of thing Alex's fans do.
It would be so easy. I could just say that the fire was set on the night of the 17th, and hours earlier on Alex's show, he had Steve Pachenik on as a guest, declaring himself in an open state of treason against the government, encouraging lone actors to fight back against the state that had no authority to rule.
And since he's full of shit, a fertilizer factory makes sense.
I have no evidence one of Alex's listeners did that, but that would be the effect you'd expect to see when a high-level, credible expert goes on a rabidly anti-government radio show and tells the audience that treason is okay and it's time to act. Obviously, I don't think that one of Alex's listeners blew up that fertilizer plant, but I want to take this moment to demonstrate how flimsy the level of inference he's using is.
Right. Actually, even then, yours makes far more sense.
I think
yours is far more likely.
You can personally feel that, but it's not true.
Just on account of how much meth I imagine Alex's fans do.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't have any data on
that. Look, I don't know this. Could be true.
So this is kind of gross, because at this point in the episode, Alex starts sort of trying to reclaim the story about the child who died in the Boston Marathon bombing.
Oh, no, he can't reclaim that. That's too late.
He starts trying to, he's saying that they're using it to make you, like, emotional about the bombing.
Right.
And he's trying to pretend that he wants to use the kid's memory for something else.
Sure.
But I would rather not talk about that at all, quite frankly. But it's important, because in this clip, he discusses his feelings about Sandy Hook and whether or not there are actors. And I think you might be surprised to hear where his head is at.
Let's put the little boy on screen. You know, the 8-year-old the media has been using. Poor little 8-year-old. Print me an article about him. I want to talk about him after we take calls coming up. They're using him. I mean, imagine he died in the Boston Marathon, and they'll put out fake conspiracies saying nobody died to discredit us all. That's a Cass Sunstein option. But then there's also some mentally ill people out there that, you know, think nothing's real because they've lost confidence in the government. See, a lot of idiots now know the government's lying, so they don't believe anything. You know, just because the government's lying all the time and doing stuff doesn't mean that everything is a lie. Or does it mean that, you know, nothing happened at Sandy Hook? No. If they've got a chance to kill some real kids, they're going to. Because they enjoy their work. Because after you've killed adults and stuff, I mean, the only thing that really makes you feel dark and powerful is to kill little kids. I mean, I've studied criminology, and our hearts go out to that little boy's parents.
Oh, good. He studied criminology, so he knows that. I mean, what he's saying is that the people who are saying that no one died at Sandy Hook are crazy.
Yeah.
And I have bad news about the guy who committed treason on your show yesterday.
Yeah.
He has published articles on his blog about how no one died at Sandy Hook.
He is crazy, though, so Alex is technically correct.
But Alex is not presenting him as crazy,
no,
and he's had
true.
Him on as a guest
that's true.
10 times since April 1st. Steve Pachenik has been on a fucking ton on this show, and he is someone who absolutely believes something that Alex says crazy people believe.
Yeah.
So great, Alex.
Who then Alex would later believe.
Clean house, Alex.
Yeah, no
this
shit.
This is sad. So anyway, talking about this kid I think is pretty gross for Alex to do. Especially because, as he talks about it a little more, he begins by bragging about his empathy.
I have extreme empathy for people. I don't have a transitory, fake, emotional thing where I only have empathy when the government and the media tells me it's okay. Iraqis kill them all. Glass parking lot. They're not
I only
human.
Have empathy when they're white.
But then you see somebody they tell you to care about. You're like, it's terrible. And then they were going to say, the Tea Party blew him up. Can you believe those dirty gun owners? MSNBC was going to come on and act real sad and go, oh, the little boy. Killed by the gun owners. Killed by the dirty Tea Party people. We're going to go to commercial. The president's coming back with his press conference right now. Is there nothing the Tea Party won't do? They're so evil.
We better take their guns.
We come back. I'm going to give the number out and take your phone calls on this situation. Do you agree with me? This is the biggest thing ever.
This is all his imagination. He's mocking an imaginary reporter being emotionally moved by the death of a child. This is all just his fantasies. He's a sick fucking person who's projecting that sickness onto a sizable audience.
Yeah.
And I disrespect it greatly.
That's just such a... If we talked about, you know, like, the first thing that you should ask anybody is, like, are you proficient at everything? And a psychopath says, yes, I'm great at everything.
Uh-huh.
And that includes the one thing they are literally... one-to-one incapable of doing, which is experiencing empathy.
He's great.
He's like, I have the best empathy, which is the least empathetic person, the least empathetic thing you can say.
Yep. So Alex, he starts or continues down this road that he is arguing that these images that came out in the New York Post are the same as the ones that he has, and that the media and the government and the investigators and the globalists, they all had those photos this whole time.
Sure.
And they're just itching to release them so they could blame this white patsy. And then Alex starts taunting these imaginary enemies.
Okay.
All guaranteed in newsrooms everywhere. They want to run with the photos of the Navy SEALs and the Army and the redneck. And you know, MSNBC and CNN had it all loaded days ago. The photos were known. They had to build it up, whodunit. And they were already ready. That's why they were like saying, yeah, it's a lone wolf. It's not Saudi Arabia. That's what we're getting from the Justice Department, Axelrod says. But we're not going to tell you yet. We want to make sure. And they're like, we got these people. Come on. Can't we break it? Can't we release the redneck patsy first? No, they've got him. They've got him on ice. But just get ready. Got to build this up before we destroy the Tea Party. All right. But you waited too long, didn't you? That's a lesson for you. You waited too long because we had you off balance, exposing false flag and taking over the press conference, that you were looking at things. And while you waited, we hurt you bad. But they're not destroyed yet. They're still dangerous.
This is embarrassing.
Fuck off.
I bet that's the same thing.
They're infinitely powered.
Yep.
But they closed their eyes for 1 second, and that's when we struck.
It's a key tactic of fascism.
Ugh.
So Alex has more pictures of the bombing and the marathon that he discusses, and I've been sort of, I don't know, holding back a little bit of information.
Coy?
Kind of. I just, you know, who cares? And we'll dispense with this.
Okay.
Major piece of Alex's narrative after this clip.
And the whole thing is blown wide open. And now we have the Navy SEALs with the Navy SEAL caps walking around directing the police on video. Guys, will you show the footage of the Navy SEAL with the radiation detector right after the bombs go off? Right there in command, and the other guys are standing around in the street with their big old black backpacks. And they were standing right there at the end, right there with the guys that blow everything up, reportedly. And, oh, no, we shouldn't put all these people on the news and ask, who are they? Because there was no drill.
So when Alex first started talking about these pictures of the Marines and stuff, there's nothing suspicious other than what he's imagining about them.
Yeah.
So I just let it be, and, you know, like, hey, who cares about this? This is stupid. He doesn't have anything to prove anything. Just that he thinks that these people look suspicious.
Right.
But I knew it was going to escalate, and now we've gotten to that point where it escalates, and it requires a bit of an explanation, because there are the people who are in these pictures. More pictures have come out of them, and they are, like, one of them is holding a radiation detector.
Yeah.
So let's discuss why.
There could have been radiation.
Mm. When Alex embarked on this conspiracy road regarding these guys who he thinks were in the SEAL team, there wasn't any information to go on. It was purely based on a couple pictures that he'd had, and he created an entire story around, entirely out of his own fantasies. However, as I said, as the days went on, more pictures of these people came out, and more information became available that really shot holes in his theories. And now I am going to lay waste to all this nonsense. The first thing that you need to understand is that Alex has repeatedly cast suspicion on these men in tan pants with backpacks because they look suspicious. One of the primary things that made these two men that were caught on camera suspicious immediately is that they appeared to be distracted and talking on phones. That picture was presented as being before the bombing happened and showed sketchy dudes who were up to something. Their behavior and the way they were looking around was used as evidence that they knew something was going to happen. However, Later, it was revealed that this picture was a cropped version of a larger image. And if you look at the actual picture, this is very much after the bombs went off. They appeared distracted and not looking at the marathon and what have you because bombs had just exploded.
Right, 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 right. That's a good reason to be distracted from a marathon.
But that doesn't address their outfits. They were wearing the same pants and shoes, and so was someone who Alex has now found a picture of holding a radiation detector. So what's up with that?
Mormons.
That still seems suspicious. It's not Mormons.
Okay.
On the day of the bombing, people who weren't trying to spin absurd conspiracy theories had already found the answer to this question. These men were members of the National Guard. This was reported on CNN's live blog on April 15th at 3:45 p.m., just about an hour after the bombs had exploded. Quote, troops from the Massachusetts National Guard were assisting police as well. This naturally raises the question, though, why is the National Guard on site at the Boston Marathon, you know? This would be a good question for Alex to ask, but he's so far away from the actual story that he doesn't even realize the answers he's demanding are already available. On April 18th, Sergeant First Class John Susie published an article in the Air National Guard website about interstate assistance that's common between National Guard units, in particular the civil support teams, which is what these men were members of. Quote, the Massachusetts team was on duty during the running of the Boston Marathon, augmented by similar civil support teams from the New York and Rhode Island National Guards. Alex legitimately couldn't have looked at too many of these photos too closely because a number of these dudes have big letters CST on their backs, short for Civil Support Team.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Kind of a giveaway.
Yeah, that would help. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it would be easy for Alex to just say that it's the same thing, you know? I have faith in him that he'd still be able to spin a conspiracy theory out of these dudes being, you know, just from their completely different organization than he's decided they're in.
Yeah.
It's still suspicious that civil support teams were there, right? Probably not. On April 16th, 2013, Eric Durr, the public information director for the New York State Military and Naval Affairs Division, told the Global Security Newswire, quote, anytime you have a high-key event where there's a lot of people, there's usually a unit from the civil support team in the area to provide assistance to first responders. It turns out this is very common. According to an article in the Washington Military Department's website, their civil support team, quote, supported the presidential inauguration, the governor's inaugural ball, and worked with the Seattle Fire and Police at every Seattle Seahawks home game. They also helped the Minnesota CST due to their increased need for assistance during the 2018 Super Bowl. All of these events and tons of other large-scale gatherings include a police presence, and they're regularly augmented by members of the civil support teams. And the only reason this time sticks out in anyone's mind is because it was the time when there was actually a terrorist attack that necessitated their activation.
Right.
These teams are specifically and specially trained to respond rapidly to chemical and radiological dangers, which is why you see one of them with a radiation detector in one of the pictures from right after the bombing.
Right.
They're an important piece of the security puzzle because in case the worst thing possible happens, they're trained and ready to deal with it. It wasn't the case that the bombs that went off at the marathon were dirty bombs. But if they had been, you'd be thanking your lucky stars that those dudes were there, because they could have saved a lot of lives.
Yeah.
Anyway, none of this really matters. Alex could still easily say that the fact that they were there means that they knew something was going to happen, or the CST being there meant this was a drill. And I guess that's a decent argument if you want to call every Seahawks home game a drill, too. None of this reality of who these men are is going to puncture Alex's conspiracy bullshit, but it's still important to point out that by the 18th, when this episode is being recorded, it's been 2 days since Eric Durr publicly talked about who these guys are. If Alex is researching this in any way, and he's really into the truth like he pretends to be, he should know this information by now, and he doesn't. And you know what's even more interesting? None of his callers know this either. This is very publicly available information, and if these info warriors are really digging into the truth like they say they're interested in, I would expect for them to at least be coming up with conspiracies about the correct group of people. But they don't. They just mirror back Alex's narrative that these are SEALs or mercenary groups. It's very cult-like. And you know what? I know that this is publicly available stuff because I only used information that was available by the 18th.
Yeah.
To look into who these dudes are and the CST teams. Like, it's crazy. Like, I can't express how stupid this is. Alex being like, we demand answers who these people are. Yeah. The answers are there.
Yeah.
Dumbass, just look.
No, well, I mean, they don't demand answers. They demand the answers we want.
Right.
I have no interest. Why, Dan, why is it that you never see any Islamic leaders condemning a radical Islam after a terrorist
attack?
It's
very much the same phenomenon.
Yep.
It's the same shit. You see what you want. You're not looking for answers. Yeah. You're looking for your narrative.
I honestly, before you even told me, like, it's really interesting, the CST thing. I'm really glad I learned about that.
Yeah.
But if you had said that he had a photo where they were using a radiation detector, my first thought is like, this is just like those old timey photographs where it looks like a guy is holding up a cell phone, but that's actually what a hearing aid looked like back then. Like, whatever you say it is, it's bullshit.
Yeah. Or, I mean, even if the answer to this question is that they were just like off duty military people there who were there for the bombing.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that the FEMA director at the time, Craig Fugate, said in an interview was that, I don't think it was at the time. I think this was just something that came out around that time from a different speech he gave.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly. But his point was that, like, when you have tragedies, first responders in our mind are paramedics and police. But often, in reality, first responders are people who are there. You know, like, your fellow citizens might be the first responders putting a tourniquet on you.
Right.
So you could, you know, if the reality wasn't that these were CST team members, and that's redundant, I apologize,
CST members.
Yeah. If they weren't that, they were just off-duty military people, you could still see, like, they're first responding, they have some sort of training, the police might enlist one of them to carry a radiation thing around.
Right.
It would be conceivable, but, the reality is...
A field medic off-duty is not just going to be like, well, not my problem, and head home.
Fuck this noise.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. So...
oh, man, this is a big deal, and I don't want to be anywhere near it.
So I think this should pretty much explain why a lot of Alex's suspicion about these dudes in tan pants in these photographs is bullshit. And you know what? This also explains why no one's interested in these photos.
Yeah.
Because anybody, let's say the FBI who's investigating this, would look at that and like, oh, there's the CST members.
Yeah.
They would know what these fucking dude people are. They, God damn it! Drives me crazy.
Yeah.
So transparent.
Yep.
And all this is, I can't stress enough how maddening it is to look back at this and be like, all of this is known. It's known. It's not like this is closely guarded secrets.
Yeah.
Who are these men?
Yeah. I mean, but that's the way it all, it's, I think it's frustrating just because of the immediacy of it in a certain sense, in that we've been, you know, on this long roller coaster ride of an investigation, but it's like any historian being like, seriously, stop saying that the Civil War was about states' rights.
Sure.
It's in the goddamn Declaration that it's about slavery. And people are like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. It's right here!
It's the added frustration to, like, seeing this and be like, oh, this could have been stopped.
Yeah.
Like,
this
information is available. Someone could have pointed it out. But in reality, I understand, too, that, like, those feelings don't plague me too much because I know how good Alex is at this stuff. And I also know that the CST does do training. Like, they train local police departments for some of the, like, preliminary stuff that they do.
Right.
And so, you know, because that's also part of their mandate, I could easily see Alex being like, aha, they train people, therefore, exercise.
It would be
still easy for him to make a conspiracy out
of course.
It. But, I don't know. I wish that... I honestly don't know what I wish.
Yeah, I would like to see more CST training and less training how to shoot unarmed black people for my police. That would be nice.
So Alex is mad here in this next clip because...
murder.
Dan Bondi to Boston to yell at the press conferences and derail them. And rightly, people are not thrilled with this. People are like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This is disruptive behavior. This guy is full of shit. And so he's mad, particularly at Glenn Beck critiquing.
I mean, how dumb do they think we're? Oh, there's no drill, they told our reporter. And then the national media said, how dare Alex Jones, the mega troll. That was the, was that Yahoo News? How dare the mega troll send his reporter to ask about a non-existent drill? The scum. And Glenn Beck spent 30 minutes yesterday. Last night, our crew heard it rebroadcast. About the terrible conspiracy site, we all know who it is, that says there was security people there and that there was a drill. God, Alex Jones is just so low. I mean, is there nothing he won't do? He's so horrible. I mean, he's such a bad man.
Hate to agree with Glenn Beck, but...
No kidding.
When you're right, you're right.
God damn it. You got to give it up to the Somali pirates when they know what they're talking about.
Uh-huh. So Alex gets around to predicting that all the people in the pictures that he has promoted and put out are probably going to be killed.
Sure.
Which is real nuts.
Yeah.
But see, most of these people will be killed very, very quickly now. And this is like the JFK deal. It's this big. I predict they're going to kill a bunch of the SEALs that were there. I predict you're going to be dying in car wrecks. You're going to be dying of heart attacks. You'll get shot at shooting ranges. You're all dead. So the only chance you've got is to go public right now with what you know.
These SEALs who are actually CST folk that everyone who is looking into this knows about already.
Yeah.
This is just sad. This is just sad. Anyway, Alex is convinced that these are not civil support team people because he doesn't know anything.
Right.
He believes that they're Marines and SEALs, but they're probably higher level than even Green Berets. Because there are levels higher than Green Berets, and Alex has a great citation for this.
Okay.
He can prove it.
Unintended consequences.
But they just think they can call us conspiracy theorists. But now you've got a Navy SEAL convention with what looks like a Green Beret retiree convention. And by the way, you just become a Green Beret to then get recruited into Black Ops. It's like five more levels above it, at least.
At least.
There's levels above Delta Force. And
okay.
The most accurate thing is in that movie, No Way Out, with Kevin Costner. And he goes, who are these men? They're following me. He goes, they're men formerly associated with Special Forces.
Yep.
And it looks like those exact guys, like crouching in doorways with big black backpacks, looking out like they're on. I mean, just, this is so bad, folks. This is so bad.
Yeah, that is bad.
Yeah, that is bad.
That is bad.
That is very bad. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many levels. You know what? Maybe there are. But your evidence of it, the best thing that's ever been shown this is a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Stop. I would challenge Alex.
Wasn't even the best Kevin Costner movie, Tin Cup.
Sure. I would challenge Alex to redo his career with the stipulation you can never cite a movie and see how well
see how
he does. Yeah. You can never use a movie as evidence for any of your bullshit ideas.
Yeah. At what point do you just start saying it's the Men in Black?
Sure.
You know, like, fuck off, Alex.
So Alex in this next clip gives a pump-up speech that is great. We all love a little bit of fake passion.
Sure.
But if you pay close attention to this, I think what you can do is really see the way that Alex makes a one-to-one connection between standing up to tyranny and subscribing to his version of Christianity.
Join me in defeating tyranny. Throw fear to the wind. Realize the only way through this is to realize the enemy operations and to grow up and face the monsters that lurk and inhabit our government and major corporations. The only way to be free is to be free and stand as free men and women have done throughout history and declare your independence. Declare your independence at a spiritual subatomic level. Declare your independence in your soul, in your will, in your intellect, and then that will work its will upon the world. Being free is a decision. And that's all you have to do is commit to truth and ask God to open your heart, open your mind, and to use you as a vessel against evil. Pray that prayer and turn yourself fully over to life, and the Holy Spirit and the universe will open up, and the living water of Jesus Christ will flow straight out of the time-space continuum, and you will truly be free.
Wow. That's insane.
Man.
You see, though, there's this, like, explicit connection between his political ideas and trying to evangelize for his fucked-up version of Christianity. It's very clear in moments like that. It happens with on a semi-regular basis, though.
Yeah.
Like, that explicit connection is drawn. It's troubling.
Yeah, I don't know how, like, here's what I would imagine for him. Post InfoWars, all he's got to do is just edit a bunch of those type of clips together, and he's got the next best-selling self-help book, right? Like, that sounds so much like an Eckhart Tolle, but with fucking rock music behind it instead of soothing
maybe
nature sounds.
I think it would be interesting to see. I think his next best idea would be like...
Kill himself?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's never the answer. It would be to just be like, okay, I realize that the political sphere is never going to save the world from the globalists. I must be a church. I don't think that's likely, but...
It's the best way for him to make money.
It would be a transition he could make.
Yeah, for sure.
It would be very similar to like Kid Rock going country.
Yeah.
That sort of sad cash grab sort of thing. So on our, one of our recent episodes, was it in the present day? I can't quite remember. But Alex was talking about how God was talking to him, but he also said, could be God, could be my subconscious.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do, yeah.
Which is troubling.
Very troubling.
Because if Alex is mixing up God talking to him and his subconscious,
it's an issue.
It is an issue. This next clip presents an even bigger issue.
When I'm totally tired, got a headache, exhausted, I will literally go in my office and just get down on my knees and say, God, give me energy, give me strength to fight. And then my subconscious, the devil, whatever you want to call it, comes and says, oh, look, you did a bad job. Look how obnoxious you are. Look, doesn't matter. My heart's right. I'm doing the best job I can.
You're not. But also, Alex can't tell the difference between the devil and his subconscious. So now, if he has a thought or a feeling or a premonition, a notion, it could either be God, the devil, or his subconscious.
Right.
And he doesn't know the difference between any of them.
Right.
That's really bad.
It is. Oh, man. And this is bananas, but he reminds me so much of Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove when he's got the little angel and the demon on either shoulder, and he's just unaffected by either. They're both saying nonsense, and he's like, yeah, my nonsense too, whatever, and they just move on. That's so, he's literally talking about having a little angel patting him on the back or a demon telling him he's evil, both of which is just a symptom of fucking
probably
depression.
Just his subconscious.
Yeah, exactly.
And he doesn't know the difference between
and
them.
And he has no clue what's going on.
The difference.
It could be God is telling him that he's doing such a shitty job and he thinks it's the devil.
The difference between like Patrick Warburton in a cartoon and Alex is that Alex has a radio show, and he's a religious fucking zealot and right-wing extremist.
That's an issue, yeah.
Yeah, that makes the stakes a little higher,
as opposed to a simple-minded heart of gold clunk.
Uh-huh.
Crunk.
Yeah. So Alex gets to taking some calls on this here episode, and this first caller that we're going to listen to is interesting because he actually does know that the pictures aren't really the suspect. And that the New York Post cover was a fuck-up.
Okay, how's this going to go?
I mean, Alex is real fluid, so it's
okay,
all right.
Okay.
I found a news article from the New York Magazine claiming that there's going to be pictures of the two suspects coming out today. But within this news article, it's not claiming that the suspects are the two suspects that have gone viral in all these pictures. It's going to be two other suspects, and these two suspects in the pictures that have gone viral, the guy in the blue jacket is actually a teenage kid who's running on his school's track team. And the guy in his white hat and black backpack is actually his track coach. Just wanted your thoughts on that.
Now, I've said over and over again, they'll come out with cover stories and they'll put forward a distraction away from the original redneck patsies that they were going to roll out. They're going to have cover stories. They're going to try to spin this. But my whole point is we put out all the suspicious groups with the backpacks, and they've chosen to go with this.
Suspiciously, the one that he didn't have any focus on at all is the people who actually, you know, there is footage of them dropping the backpacks at these spots.
Yeah.
And pretty hard hard to get around evidence that they were the actual perpetrators. Weird that Alex had all the pictures and showed all the angles, mysteriously accept the correct one.
Man, that's just impervious armor.
Yep.
It's just impervious armor.
Yep.
There's nothing you can do.
Nope. Any evidence that you're wrong is a cover-up.
Part of the cover-up.
Yep.
It's just added into the churn.
Because they wanted to fucking pin it on this white redneck guy. And Alex says this, and man, he's just making all of this up. This is based on nothing.
That's why I said they were going to go with the rednecks, but they went with the Saudis, whether they're real or not, as a divert. They probably had other backup rednecks in the area, too, that aren't in the photo, but they're scared. They're going over all the photos to see if we've got photos of the rednecks next to their handlers.
What?
And, again, I wouldn't want to be those rednecks right now. Poor guys. You know, they were like, be part of a special program to help America. And we want to be part of a drill, just like 7-7 with those Arabs. I want to help America. Good, Billy. You're going to help them now. Are you ready? I mean, it's just so sick. All right. Thank you. God bless you.
This is all just in his head. Like, this is one of the things that this episode, particularly in this stretch of time, was like really laborious to get through.
Yeah.
Because Alex is kind of being affected by the lack of information too.
Yeah.
Like, he's able to spin the, like, you know, the pretending that the New York Post cover is the official photos that were released. We were right all along.
Right.
Someone should throw me a parade. All that stuff's all good and well, but this is, I mean, it's a little stale. Like, it deteriorates into constant, just like him making stuff up about what must have happened and flights of fancy that he has about these guys being chosen as patsies. And like, it's just like he's suffering from the same problem that the mainstream media is, because as creative as he is, his creativity has kind of hit a wall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that does make this a bit more of a slog to get through.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Alex recognizes that, like, he's getting a lot of traffic off this. And he knows that, like, this is the time to strike. The iron is hot right now. So he can't do anything but do all this.
Now, some stations don't carry the next hour of Overdrive. You'll need to go to InfoWars.com, audio screams, or InfoWars.com/listen. And there's a free video feed up there. We're going to continue this talk. Be sure to spread the word about all our AM&FM affiliates and support their local sponsors and become a sponsor. And I don't know, John Harmon was saying a whole passel of new stations are wanting to sign up right now. So people are getting what's happening. And better look your grandbabies and kids in the eyes and realize we don't beat these people. We're going under Soviet-style occupation mixed in with some Hitler.
Mixed in with
mixed
some
in
Hitler.
With a little Hitler.
Just a dash of Hitler.
Just a dash of Hitler. A lot of Soviet propaganda. A little dash of Hitler.
Yeah.
They're not going to use the chairman.
You know that Alex embellishes just about everything, but I don't think that this is necessarily complete fiction. Like, I bet he is getting some new stations wanting to sign up because of the increased stature.
Yeah.
Because of this.
And it helps that it's free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This media blitz, that he's kind of becoming a really hot item,
mm-hmm.
in, people on the internet being interested in his information because it's all bullshit. And
right.
It's this absence, this vacuum of real official information is making people lose their mind.
Yeah.
And Alex is capitalizing on that, and it's really scary. So Alex jumps into this overdrive and it takes some more calls. We're going to enter a period here where we get to see just how fucking stupid Alex's listeners are. I hate to say that. I don't like to judge individuals as much as I judge Alex, but some of these people are profoundly dumb. And I know that part of it is the training that Alex gives them. You know, like he doesn't expect much out of them. He rewards stupid speculation. And so that behavior is reinforced. And you get to see some of the fruits of that. In this first one, this caller suggests that we need vigilante posses to go around and arrest cops.
No, that's not good.
And my other point, Alex, is that LERs and all these people aren't the only people with power. They have actually no power that any of the other constituents don't. If you see people breaking the Constitution, if you see people breaking the law, put your hands on them. Arrest somebody. You know what I mean? This is what I'm saying to all the people out there. Maybe what we need is roving hordes of just good people, arresting people, breaking the law.
Well, I mean, more and more, if a cop is breaking the law, you're supposed to be able to citizen arrest them, but they'll shoot you. I mean, they're on such a power trip. Not all the cops. A lot of cops are waking up that the globalists have overplayed their hand, overcooked
the worst cops.
You know, it's the opposite of half-baked. They've overbaked it. You've got to really reach out and go, come on, break the trance. And with cops, go, treat me with respect. Stop doing what you're doing. Stop violating my rights. And if they arrest you for no reason, you sue them.
I think Alex's response to that is probably about as good as you can do on InfoWars. But
yeah,
like,
that probably is.
I mean, like, hey, yeah, there's cops that are way out of control, obviously.
Yeah.
Reform is very needed. But going and assaulting a cop and putting them under citizen's arrest is absolutely the wrong tactical decision.
It's not going to do anybody any good.
No.
I don't think you're going to be able to grab even the most corrupt cop as a citizen, even the most corrupt cop, and take them to the police station and have all the other cops be like, thanks for doing that for
Book
us.
Them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We didn't have the courage to do it ourselves.
I think that, like, even if you have a roving band of good guys, it's going to cause trouble.
When have we ever had a rope? No band of good guys has ever been roving. Roving bands are usually bandits.
It doesn't seem like there's a lot of historical precedent. So we get another caller, and this guy just is full of bullshit.
Number one, I wanted to say to your listeners that I've listened to you for over 3 years. I have read probably 50 books as a result of listening to you. I can tell your listeners out there that InfoWars is an extremely credible organization, and the fact that you do things on such an evidence-based way of approaching the news and stuff, I totally agree with. I'm an attorney, so I take that very seriously, and I appreciate what you do.
I don't know if that guy's an attorney.
He is absolutely not an attorney.
I have some questions about that, but yeah, I've read 50. Alex hasn't referenced 50 books.
I've watched 50 movies. Sure. He's referenced at least that many.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I would
this
buy that.
This is so evidence-based. Your approach to the news, you just prove everything. This is sad, but that's the perception that Alex puts out, and it's internalized by the audience. They accept that he says he's read everything, so he has.
Yeah.
Would Alex lie to you? No, he's a hero. He's a hero for Americana. So this next caller, he's just saying bullshit.
And I was able to record WCVB. It's Boston's ABC owned and operated affiliate, ABC5. And one of their reporters, I found this very interesting, said that the head of FEMA, which is Craig Fugate, was in Boston.
Oh, no, that's true. They were all there. They were all there. Just like they were all there for 7/7 bombing. Yeah, no, that is confirmed. Yeah.
That's confirmed. So I'm not entirely sure that the FEMA director, Craig Fugate, was in Boston on April 15th, but I can say for certain that deputy administrator of FEMA, Richard Cirino, was. I base this on a report that Cirino wrote called Lessons Learned from the Boston Marathon Bombing.
I was there.
Which was released on July 10th, 2013. In the introduction to the report, Cirino says, quote, I was in Boston on that tragic day in April celebrating Patriots Day in my hometown. And I'm here now not just as a FEMA deputy director, but administrator, excuse me, but also as a Bostonian and former paramedic. Patriots Day is a sizable holiday in Boston. He's from Boston, so he went home to celebrate. That makes sense. There's nothing in this report about Fugate also being in Boston when the attack happened. I can find literally no indication that the actual director, Craig Fugate, was in Boston at the time. However, I did find a conspiracy blog saying that the fact that Richard Cirino was there is proof that the bombing was a FEMA false flag. So I have to assume that that's what this caller is just fucking up with the details. And he's really just talking about Cirino being there. And again, there's nothing suspicious about him being in Boston. This is just utter shit these people are talking.
Everybody knows that FEMA officials do not have any private lives whatsoever. They were grown from a lab, and so they don't have any hometowns other than, I don't know, wherever sad amphibious eyes are these days.
Right.
So, you know, there's no way that there could be any rational explanation for a FEMA official being anywhere
ever
other than the FEMA headquarters where I assume they live in camps.
You also, like, have to assume that, you know, I found this conspiracy blog about Richard Cirino being there.
Yeah.
And if Fugate was also there, you'd have to assume that that would be a part of the conspiracy theory that's on this blog.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Even if they couldn't prove that he was there.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they toss him in there?
Why not?
Because you've got somebody who you can prove was there.
Exactly.
There you go.
Right. So here in this next clip, I think that we have what Alex gives as close to a mission statement for InfoWars and what they're doing right now. And it's fucked up.
So people need to get our articles on this out to everybody. I mean, this is an InfoWar going on right now, folks, over who can control this narrative. We've caught them with their pants down. But if we don't expose that, they won't go down. God bless you. Good to hear from you.
It's about controlling the narrative. And that's all good and well in your mind when you, it's the same thing with Steve when he's talking about, I'm going to commit treason, but I think it's patriotism.
Yeah.
Alex is trying to control the narrative to drive traffic to his website and increase sales. But the narrative he's pushing is bullshit. There's nothing behind any of this stuff. All of the things about the pictures that he's found, there's innocuous explanations for just about everything. There's nothing suspicious except for what he's imagined. He's not pushing a journalistic narrative. He's not pushing an investigation narrative. He's pushing his fantasies. He's pushing his perceptions, his storyline that he's come up with that validates the idea that the federal government is evil and out to crush white gun-owning patriots.
Yeah.
That's all he's doing. So controlling the narrative for him is evil. It's propaganda. It's misleading people.
Yeah, I just... Is it, man, there's just, Like, is it just some fucking flaw within our brains that is not going to be corrected? Like, that, like, these guys just can spin fiction out of nothing and convince a large enough people to be dangerous, be really hurtful, dangerous,
I think
monstrous people.
I think a lot of it comes down to a very unique talent that Alex has. And granted, it's not unique, but there are not many people who could perform on the level that he does. In terms of, like, he makes himself such a clown in order to be that, like, thing that seduces people in with the entertainment value. Yeah. And then they keep watching, and his vague references to things that he never explains and never actually documents or proves is enough to be like, oh, he's onto something. And then, as we've seen in the aftermath of the bombing, he's able to use real-world events and incorporate them really quickly into proving the narratives that he's laying out. Like, if you were listening to all this and you were maybe think Alex is entertaining and you're listening and watching, like, a lot of your suspicions might go away that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's interacting with the real world in a way that he's presenting as reinforcing his worldview, but it actually doesn't. That's part of his talent. Other people can't do that. Like, other people just don't have those skills.
I guess contemporaries, maybe not, but I mean, there's always one of these guys.
Sure.
Like, these guys are, like, it seems like every generation has their own one of these assholes.
There's different permutations, sure.
Yeah. So it's just like, it just continues on this vicious cycle of bullshit being disseminated to be believed by enough people to turn bullshit into something that is real and tangible to these people. And we get fucked.
Yeah, it's tough. It's pretty tough.
At the end of the day, people who believe in reality, get fucked over.
Yeah, it's hard. yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
Right?
But I do know this. It turns out that you know how you have IQ, your intelligence quotient?
I don't.
You know, so people have this this IQ thing, right?
I know.
And did you?
But do they?
Did you know that you can actually will your IQ to rise?
I mean, we have them, and lying
it's
about the
reading.
Drill. We have these bastards, and praise God. I mean, it shows commitment. If you are committed and you study and you focus and you work, these are men too. That's why they're so scared of us. It's why they put poison in our water to dumb us down. Well, once you're conscious of what they've done to us, you just gut up more in your brain. I mean, if you tell yourself to boost your IQ, it'll boost in a crisis. Humanity needs to get out of this slug-like trance and take action, Julio.
So you can just raise your IQ if you want to. Just focus.
Do you feel smarter?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Wow, it works.
You can also accept Jesus Christ into your heart
that
as
raises
Lord
your
and
IQ.
Savior. That is also raises your IQ.
Absolutely.
Does he know what IQ is or how to measure it?
No. But I imagine he probably doesn't think much of his audience.
Right.
He probably thinks a lot of them are probably pretty stupid.
Right.
And thinks that they want to be smarter. So appeal to that idea.
Yeah.
You can will yourself to be smarter if you commit to this info war.
See what I'm saying? That's some Eckhart Tolle right there.
That's snake oil shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's Eckhart Tolle.
One of the things that makes my IQ go up is whenever I find Alex lying about something, I raise a point. I have given myself little points.
Have you?
No.
You gotta keep track of them on the whiteboard right over there.
Whatever the case, my IQ is about to rise by one.
TJ quote?
They are on record. In fact, tell my writers right now to look this up because I heard it on the news. They were searching bags at the start and finish line. Why then did they let 20 people or more in with giant black backpacks? I mean, this is so incredibly obvious. How did the bombs get in when everybody was being searched? Again, inside job, anybody.
Anybody? Alex is completely lying about bags being checked. According to the 130-page after-action report of the Boston Marathon bombing, produced in partnership by all manner of Massachusetts law enforcement and public health organizations, bags were not being checked. From page 79 of that report, in a section titled, quote, areas needing improvement, they discuss security limitations. Quote, the areas surrounding the finish line in Boston and the starting line in Hopkinton, which are deemed to be higher risk than other public viewing areas, are screened for the presence of contaminants and devices several times during the day and are patrolled by law enforcement personnel. However, these areas are open to the public, are heavily populated, and no screening of persons or baggage is conducted. The report itself wrestles with how security protocols could be put in place that wouldn't completely destroy the marathon. Quote, because the Boston Marathon is a large public family event, there needs to be an appropriate balance between security protocols and the feel of the event. Ultimately, it gives some suggestions, like prohibiting bags in certain places or increased police presence. But it stresses a second time, quote, these protocols should not be so intrusive as to change the feeling of the event. Alex is just making up the idea that all bags were screened in order to reinforce his conspiracy that if someone had a bomb in a backpack there, the cops would have to know and have to have let them in with it. This is absolutely not true. He is lying to, as he has put it, control the narrative.
Yeah.
That's all this is.
Dan, how long is a marathon?
26-something miles, 26.2 miles.
Yeah. So can you check every bag along? And even then, even if you're talking about targeted near the finish line, you can walk. That's such fucking, it's just like the TSA where it's like, here's, and the, even their report at least admits that there needs to be a balance between those instead of a giant dumb overreaction that turns into fucking theater in order to make sure all of us feel like we're being watched.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
Ugh!
So
people are stupid.
Yeah. So in this next clip, I think Alex is recognizing that he's gotten about as far as he can go with the information that he has available to him. Like all of the conspiracies he's spun so far, the staring at random photos from 4chan, he's gotten about as much mileage as he can. So what he needs the audience to do is go find local footage from the day and come up with things for him to talk about.
Great.
Everyone needs to go to the two different TV feeds that are online of that day and watch them with a note and pad and then call into shows, email the link, or if you have the capability, grab it, put it on YouTube. And listen, we're going to destroy them. There's smoking guns. There's probably the army handing the guys the bombs.
Probably.
There's probably video of the guys, you know, detonating it. We've got them. We already know they did a false flag, and they just think you're too lazy and too stupid to do it. So
you mean they probably
defeat the enemy. Defeat the enemy.
Defeat the enemy by going and finding maybe bad reporting in the immediate aftermath, like people reporting things capriciously, that then I can turn into conspiracies to prove my points. He's doing. That's literally all he's doing.
Guys, go edit more TV cartoons together to make me look right all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Fucked up.
That's just not okay, right?
No.
That's just not okay. That's like Barnes allowing people to vote on what cases he takes, or you're like, there's just something very wrong with that.
I mean, the harsher reality behind that is that Barnes isn't doing that.
No,
that's an appearance
not.
Of control. Yeah. He's trying to get people to subscribe to his law center for.
It's probably not legal.
It might not be.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's at least unethical.
Yeah.
As is what Alex does next. And that is he turns over the show to Jakari Jackson and David Knight, who host for a while. And Alex, he knows that the press conference that the FBI is holding is coming up, and so he teases that a little bit.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back with Jakari Jackson and David Knight and your phone calls and some other breaking news and then more phone calls and then the press conference with Obama in an hour and a half or the FBI with their new patsy.
We're on the mark.
They got their new patsies. He's already
moving on.
He's done the work, and he has preemptively discredited whatever they come out with. At that FBI conference.
That's so funny. He doesn't even need to talk about whether or not his patsies were the right ones or anything
right.
like that. Doesn't matter. Here are their new patsies.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it. Done.
And normally, you know what I would do is David Knight, Jakari Jackson are taking over. Click.
Right.
But that press conference is coming up while the show is still going to be going.
Yeah.
And I know, because I live in 2019, that press conference is a crucially important piece of this. And I needed to see what the immediate reaction would be on InfoWars of the suspect photos being released.
Sure.
And so I decided to keep listening while David Knight and Jakari Jackson host. And something that's very interesting is that Alex doesn't really leave the studio.
See, now that's kind of what I suspected was going to happen.
I honestly think that he might be drinking. Like, it might be a 2013 drunk Alex.
Okay.
Because he cannot stop barging into the studio and interrupting them while they're trying to do their show. Like here, Jakari is trying to talk about Janet Napolitano, and Alex is just yelling in the studio.
Look how arrogant she is. They're scared, man. This is a confidence game. Hey, listen, you witch pig. We know what you did. Excuse me. I apologize about yelling in your ear.
That's okay.
Got any hearing? Got any hearing left? I love how we just leave these vitamins over here. It's like when we're doing the shot, there's like this big pile of vitamins. All right, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here.
No, you're not.
Oh, he's drunk.
He's not getting out of there either.
I love how he
keeps coming back.
I love how we leave these piles of vitamins around.
Is that trying to buzz market longevity, Alex?
Man.
Hmm.
Jesus.
So they, because they're not great at this point.
No.
David Knight and Jakari Jackson are not super. I mean, David Knight's never good, and Jakari left before he ever got too much exposure on the actual Alex show. He's mostly on the nightly news. But they're not good. So they take a lot of calls. And one thing I will say to their credit, they move along with the callers.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Alex will just like take a caller, the caller will say something for like 2 minutes, then Alex will rant for 10 and be like, sorry, no time
sure,
for more calls.
Sure.
They at least are like, all right, make your point. We'll say something and then next caller.
Okay.
Like, it's actually how a call-in show is supposed to go.
Right.
Unfortunately.
According to your twisted vision.
Unfortunately, they're still InfoWars callers.
Sure.
They're still very stupid.
Sure.
Also, I wanted to let everybody know that, you know, you got to understand that Alex Jones doesn't just pull all the stuff from his rear end. I mean, he gives you the tools. He gives you all the evidence you need. A lot of these other you know, media sources, they don't do that. They don't give you the sources. So before you start arguing that, you know, Alex is a shill, he's a, you know, this and that, he's a misinformation, you know, agent.
An idiot.
He provides everything there. You just need to look into it. And I just wanted to say I appreciate and love you guys.
So stupid.
Love you guys.
So stupid.
Even in 2013, every fucking word was hyperlinked to a source.
Yeah.
You know, if you read any article on Guardian, 50 words are hyperlinked to the source that proves the reason that
there are a lot.
Every fucking one.
Yeah. So, like, that guy is just stupid. He thinks Alex proves everything that he says. Bullshit. Absolutely not true. But this next caller is stupid in a way that I actually find repulsive.
I was calling about the guy you have a picture of that's carrying the radiation detector.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he went on Wolf Blitzer, and his name is Dr. David King. If you go to, let's see here, the Situation Room for yesterday, about 6:35 Eastern time, he was on there with him, and he claims that he left the race before the explosion.
Situation Room, repeat how we can find that again. Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer.
Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, and type in Dr. David King.
So, as always, Alex's callers are a showcase of stupidity. Alex has trained his audience to trust their guts and just make connections between any two things they might think are related. So when they call in, that's all they have to operate on. It's tremendously dangerous. Since Alex doesn't really have a high standard for what information he'll just repeat, like, you've seen these things snowball on our show before. In this case, this caller is completely wrong. Dr. David King was a person who was on Wolf Blitzer, but he's not the person in Alex's photo holding a radiation meter who was a member of the civil support team, which Alex has no idea about, nor does anybody else who has any interaction with InfoWars.
Of course not.
The story this caller is trying to pitch is a disgrace to Dr. King. And he should be ashamed of himself for saying something like this on a nationally syndicated show with literally no evidence. King's wife was an avid runner, and she had previously run in the Boston Marathon. One year, he went along to watch at the finish line, and he saw the looks of accomplishment and glee in people's faces as they crossed the line, and he just loved it. To quote King, quote, "They looked like they belonged on a Wheaties box, every last one of them." So he decided to do it himself and chase that feeling. In 2013, he ran the marathon and finished about an hour before the bombs went off. He lingered a while to watch other runners complete their race and see the excitement and exuberance in their face, and then he left. On his way home, news broke about the bombs, and he immediately headed for Massachusetts General Hospital. He did that because he's a trauma surgeon. This man had just finished running a marathon, and he selflessly went immediately to try and help victims of the attack. I don't know everything about Dr. David King, but his actions in the aftermath of the Boston bombing are the sorts of things you can easily describe as acts of everyman heroism. When he could have easily just rationalized going home to shower or saying,
hey, I literally just ran a marathon.
Sure. Or just say, like, there's other doctors. Someone else will help. He could have done that. He didn't. He jumped right in and saved people's lives. This caller has randomly decided that he's the person in one of Alex's pictures because of a slight physical similarity, and he's trying to turn King's story of heading right back, you know, to Mass General into a lie because the photos prove that he was there at the scene of the bombs. Fuck this caller and fuck him again for choosing to spout this shit on the only news outlet likely just to repeat the claim without looking into it, without even knowing what they're doing. They're trying to turn a hero into a villain, trying to rob a person of their noble act, all in the name of making their conspiracy sound more plausible. This is detestable behavior, and I cannot stress that enough. All of these people should be deeply ashamed of themselves. This caller should still feel bad about this to this day, yeah. And yet they never will be. They don't even give a fuck.
But that's a feature for them. That's a feature. The feature for them is always turning the people who exercise empathy, initiative,
heroism.
And heroism into villains. Because what they are is people who won't and don't. You know, like the way they treated when you went through the story of Soros's dad and all of his acts of heroism, and then you see what they're doing to him, and you're like, that's part of the goal.
Yeah.
If people are heroes, then you want to follow those guys.
Well, it's that dynamic, or they turn heroes into props.
Yeah.
If it suits the narrative that they want to push.
They have to control the narrative, and a hero is bad for that.
Control
the
narrative, baby!
Heroes are bad for the narrative.
So I just really fucking hate stuff like that. It drives me up a wall. Like, David King did exactly what you would applaud someone doing.
You would give somebody a fucking award for doing that shit.
And here he's being painted as a conspirator in a plot to bomb civilians. Mm. So anyway, another stupid caller calls in.
My cousin just called me less than an hour ago. There has been a bomb threat at Cal State Los Angeles.
Cal State Los Angeles, can we get on there, guys, yeah. Please?
They're evacuating the school. They've never done this in my 4 years there. It's never been this big. My cousin called me to tell me that they're closing down the school because of a bomb threat.
You know what? I want to take that back. That's not totally fair. This caller isn't as stupid as all the others, because that is a real thing.
Right.
There was a bomb threat at Cal State on April 18th.
Right.
But don't call into InfoWars about this. This has nothing to do with the Boston bombing. It was almost certainly the result of a prank call phoning in a fake bomb threat, which, you know, that's just something that campus administrations can't ignore, especially at the days after the Boston bombing. You know what, Jordan? Something people probably don't want to think about is that there are a fuck ton of people who call in bomb threats to schools.
All the time.
In 2016, the Educators School Safety Network did a study on the phenomenon. It's really scary to think about. Obviously, almost all of them are fake threats, but it's still such a horrible sort of prank for a person to pull, and to imagine that so many people choose to do it makes me feel real bad about humanity. They found that in the 2015-2016 school year, there were 1,267 bomb threats made to U.S. schools. There were 206 in January 2016 alone, which comes out to about 10 per school day. That's a reality that school administrators around the country just have to live with and deal with. We end up hearing about almost none of these, and if we do, it's a passing news story filling a slot in, like, local news programming. This case in Cal State is only something that makes headlines because it happened after the Boston bombing, and people were eating up any kind of bomb-related news, wondering if there's a connection. Had the suspects made it all the way across the country? Were there copycats out there?
Yeah.
My heart goes out to the students at Cal State that had to go through this scare. Like, that obviously is not something you want to have to experience, but this story being introduced into Alex's show can only do harm. There's no reason for this to be brought up.
I just can't get over it. This has never happened in all 4 years I've been here. Great, dude.
It's still
good
slightly
work.
Relevant.
I get that, but reason, all 4 years of my...
The reason I also feel a little bit bad about calling him stupid, he's a college kid who, like, his experience in the real world isn't as robust as...
No. His brain hasn't finished developing. I understand that. And I understand that the outsized importance 4 years to a college kid... means
totally.
As compared to somebody who
it's
is
basically
our
his
age.
Whole adult life.
Yeah, pretty much. But at the same time, man, if you are in college and you have been there for 4 years, you should at least have learned by now that 4 years is not that big of a measure of time.
You would hope.
Yeah.
And also, he is still stupid because he decided to call into InfoWars. So
that's all. We're strike two.
I tentatively am still calling him stupid. Here's another dumb fuck caller.
All right.
Yes, sir. I just have one question about Boston.
Sure.
If we had all these policemen there, hundreds of them, and soldiers there, how many of them were hit by shrapnel when these things went off?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Or were they warned to get out of the way?
I don't know, because we've heard the reports, Rob Dewitt's given the story about his brother-in-law was in the Army, I believe. He's a jogger in the Army, and he was pulled out of the race, his brother-in-law, before the bombs went off. So as far as I know, I'm not saying there haven't been, but I've not heard any stories of police or military being hit by the shrapnel. Have you, David?
I know that he's asking that question to David Knight, but I figure I might be better equipped to field it, so I'm going to take this
one. Go for it.
Generally speaking, it's the practice of journalists not to name all of the people who are injured in a situation like this to protect their privacy. A number of folks made the choice to be identified, and that's their decision, and it's no different for a police officer. I would assume that they would have the choice to discuss their injury if they want to, but I'd also assume they might be less likely to, since it could possibly feel like an attempt to make the story about themselves, and maybe police officers would be more likely to not want that kind of attention.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very difficult to trace down the identities of all the people who were injured in the bombing. I think that's a good thing. Leave these people the fuck alone. They've been through enough. All that being said, I can still tell this twang-mouthed caller that he's a fucking idiot. A USA Today story from April 15th, the day of the bombing, literally says, quote, bloodied spectators were carried to a medical tent for runners. At least one police officer was hurt. So there we go. We got an injured cop, buddy.
Yeah, but the globalists always have to injure one cop so it throws you off the scent.
Right. Now what? Does showing that one cop was hurt in the bombing somehow make your paranoid delusions that the globalists pulled all their agents out so they wouldn't get hurt go away? Of course it doesn't. These aren't sincere questions. They're conspiracy bullshit pretending to be curiosity. This asshole doesn't want to know if any cops got injured. He wants to inject the idea that none were to reinforce the idea that there was foreknowledge and this is a false flag.
Yeah.
That's why Jakari immediately starts talking about Rob Dew's brother, because that's the InfoWars talking point that matches up with this conspiracy bullet point. Meanwhile, at least one cop did get hurt. It was reported 3 days prior to them being on air here, so they have every reason to know that. And they still haven't even proved shit about Rob Dew's brother. He might have actually been dehydrated for all we know. This all amounts to nothing. And get this. Even if Jakari or David knew that this USA Today article exists that says one cop was injured, it's in their best interest to not know that.
Oh, yeah. Because don't ask questions you don't want to actually know the answer to,
right,
Dan.
Yeah. Right. It actually is advantageous to, as an InfoWars reporter, to not
absolutely
know a lot.
Do not learn anything.
Because if you do, if you have read this article, this twang-mouthed idiot calls in and he's like, do we know if any cops got hurt? And you're like, yeah, actually it was reported right after the bombing that there was a cop who was injured. Where do you go then? It's a dead end. It's a propaganda dead end.
Yeah.
So
no,
you intentionally stay blissfully naive of any real information and it allows you to lie.
Right. Being a journalist is disqualifying to try and get a job as a journalist at InfoWars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I suppose maybe like a, I don't know, short fiction writer would be better suited for it.
Sure.
I think that'd be great.
Jakari wrote that comic book after he left
InfoWars. Yeah, yeah, get a nice little, New Yorker byline.
I don't think they can.
I think so.
So at this point, Alex barges into the studio again because he wants to laugh about how the press conference is coming up.
Of course.
We will provide you with accurate information as it becomes available.
I look forward to that. Thank you. I yield back.
Say it on air.
And there it is. You saw Miss Napolitano right there. We will provide you, sir. Don't get your sources anywhere else. We will provide you with said information.
The press conference is coming up in 20 minutes. That's all
he's
I
drunk.
Can say.
Alex seems very excited about this press conference, and we will be giving you live coverage on that.
I do think he's probably drunk.
Oh, yeah.
So we get back to stupid callers now.
Jesus.
Here's another stupid-ass caller.
Just a quick question. I don't know if you guys happen to look at YouTube about Charlie Chaplin. Appreciate you guys.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you get a little closer to your phone?
Oh, yeah. Charlie Chaplin. I don't know if you guys watched his video on YouTube, Message to the Humanity.
Are you talking about the original Charlie Chaplin? Or is this somebody new?
I'm not really too sure if it's somebody new or somebody original, but there's a video on YouTube, Message to Humanity, and it's a pretty good video. I don't know if you guys ever looked at it or maybe someone else has.
No, I haven't seen it. What's the video about?
It's just talking about how he doesn't want to be a dictator, and he wants people to wake up from all the chaos and corruption that's going on in the world. That's about a 3-minute, 30-second clip.
Okay.
All right. Well, That's insane.
Is he literally pulling a quote, a little clip from Charlie Chaplin's The Dictator?
The Great Dictator, yeah.
Jesus
he did. Someone else did and put some music behind it.
Oh, my God.
But this caller is informing David and Jakari about a hot video on YouTube, which I think you've already deduced is just a little clip from Charlie Chaplin's Great Dictator. That fucking movie came out in 1940, and it also was nominated for 4 Oscars that year. It was huge.
It's a good movie.
That video gets passed around a lot, and there's no reason for, let's say, David and Jakari not to be able to figure it out when he says it's about how he doesn't want to be a dictator.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's from The Great Dictator. But look, dude, a lot of people forget, they tend to forget that that clip comes from a full-length movie, and that the speech being given, the character is a Jewish man pretending to be a character who's clearly Hitler.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Hitler.
It's not subtle.
Right.
It is not subtle.
But that clip doesn't take into account that that's not actually the character of Hitler.
Right.
It's
a guy
pretending.
Right.
Anyway, that movie is one of the most enduring pieces of comedic satire of fascism and authoritarian rulers, released in the fucking middle of World War II. And it's pretty amazing that neither Jakari or David really seem to register what the caller's talking about. It's also pretty amazing that this caller doesn't know who Chaplin is and seems unclear about whether or not he was watching something that might be new. These callers are so fucking stupid.
I know. I mean, I don't want to be, I'm not going to be too much of a dick to this kid for not knowing about the dictator. I get that. But that's like dragging on people on Twitter who are like, oh man, it's cool that this Paul McCartney guy is going to be famous now because of Kanye or something like that.
I still think it's okay to make fun of that.
I agree. It's okay to make fun of it, but it's like, that's fucking stupid. You learn more. You know
what you're mocking though? And when you do that, you're mocking a lack of interest. This person is calling into InfoWars to talk about this hot new Charlie Chaplin video, which he saw on the internet.
Yes.
Finding out who Charlie Chaplin is one click away.
He didn't do that.
Instead, he saw the video and was like, hey, y'all heard of Charlie Chaplin? To call InfoWars about it.
Jesus.
That is worth mocking.
That is bad.
That impulse is worth mocking.
I know. I want to be kinder to, cause I don't mind.
I'm running thin on patience.
Yeah.
But also, when I sit back and think about it, I can kind of understand how, like, Jakari and David, who are people who work for a fascist-leaning propaganda outlet, probably wouldn't be too into exploring the world of fascism satire.
Yeah, no,
so
that
it makes
get
sense
them
that they might not know about
I
the Great Dictator.
I could get them in real trouble.
David Knight would rather watch Song of the South again than go back to the classics.
Oh, those were the good old days.
So now, another stupid caller.
How you doing?
Oh,
doing
no.
Very well.
Good. I was calling in to make sure people were informed of the Act of 1871, which turned the United States into a corporation. 2 constitutions now are in place, the Organic Constitution and
which has
the Corporate
a heart.
Constitution.
Which mm-hmm. doesn't.
You said the Act of 1871.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
There was only one act that year.
Uh-huh.
It was a single act play that year.
I've been saying that these callers are stupid.
This one exceeds my expectations. Go to fucking town on that one, Dan.
I really don't have time to get into the ins and outs of this theory, but basically it's sovereign citizenship.
Yeah.
Tracing back to capitalized letters, that sort of bullshit. I honestly don't even care about this. Like, if you look into it at all, you just end up on dumb fuck blogs and message boards with people talking about how sneaky the Rothschilds are.
Yeah. So, come on.
The Act of 1871 just created the District of Columbia. It didn't create a new constitution for the U.S. In fact, the District of Columbia was created the way it was specifically because of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And by that, I mean the real Constitution, not the corporate one those sneaky Jews forced on us, which is what this theory is all about.
Yeah, I know. It sucks, and it makes so much sense that sovereign citizens are both the dumbest and most violent. Like, those two have to...
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Those two are like that Venn diagram of like, oh, that's the dead center.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
So we get to the press conference.
Okay.
And it's pretty short, but it was designed to be pretty short.
Yeah, well,
it was just announcing these images, and they were going to take a few questions. It was not meant to be a half-hour affair
or anything. Right.
And so here is the immediate response from David and Jakari Jackson right after the press conference ends.
So you heard the FBI agent say, these are the only images that you need to focus on. These two guys out of everybody in the crowd. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure the FBI is competent and, you know, definitely looking into the situation. But as Dan pointed out, we have other images on Infowars.com. There are images on other sites that may not be on Infowars.com of other people that may be included in the bombing.
When he said Dan pointed out, he's not talking about me.
No, he's not.
He's talking about Dan Bondi.
Yeah.
As I was listening to that press conference, I could already tell how it was going to land from like a spin perspective. Richard DeLorious of the Boston FBI, whose name I'm pretty sure I'm still mispronouncing, but maybe less so than when I thought it was DeLorious.
Oh, that's not good.
Anyway, he takes the podium and explains that they've conducted a very intense investigation and are confident that they have pictures of the correct suspects. This assessment is based on photographic evidence of one suspect placing his backpack at the precise location of the site of the second explosion and other footage of the two suspects walking together. And, you know, obviously they wouldn't have released pictures sooner because that would have, if they didn't know pretty certainly that they were the right people,
he'd
get people killed. In his prepared remarks, he asks for the public's help in identifying the two people in these pictures, but also says that other pictures people are circulating are not relevant, and focusing on them doesn't help them get to the bottom of the case. I strongly suspect that his comment was not so much addressed at the dum-dums on the internet and InfoWars as much as it was a polite fuck you to the New York Post for their cover image with two incorrect suspects.
Yeah, very much so.
But I knew as soon as it came out of his mouth that the spin was going to be that the man doesn't want you looking at these forbidden images that tell you the true story. And I almost gasped when Dan Bondi yelled about InfoWars having other pictures in the background at that press conference.
He was there yelling
at the FBI press conference.
Oh, God.
I should have realized. You know, I really should
have. He had to have been there. Yeah, of course. That's where that's the only place he could be in that moment.
I had forgotten that he was in Boston.
Of course. Yep.
I'm completely immersed in this stuff. And yet, even for me, it was shocking to hear him there interacting with and interfering with the really important real world moment. You know, it's one thing for Alex to manipulate and lie to everyone about highly emotional and sensitive things. But I was thinking about this moment. And what Dan Bondi is doing as an official InfoWars employee could be described as trying to disrupt a federal investigation. You know, it was an impotent effort. It's not like there's really anything that he could do with this, but his intention is to be a public nuisance, and he's hoping to derail the FBI's investigation into these two suspects. He could pretend like he's doing it because he knows the real truth about the case, but the intention is the same. His efforts are explicitly directed at creating publicity stunts to get attention off the real suspects. And that's fucked up. I don't know if that's a crime, but it feels like it borders on obstruction.
It, I don't know how much it borders.
It's hard to say. It's real fucked up.
Yeah.
And you look at it through.
I suppose the only thing was they would have to know that they weren't the real suspects, which they do. So I think it is obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you look at it through that prism, these actions seem a lot worse.
Yeah.
So Alex now barges into the studio and yells about how they're desperate in their cover up.
I imagine he tears his shirt open and he's fucking.
Might as well have.
All right. Now, once again,
guys, I just got to say, I'm going to cover this on the nightly news. This is a desperate cover up.
Yeah.
You're just putting rabbit trails out left and right. We've got the people. Mm-hmm. We've got the Patsy, the redneck they were going to burn. That they pulled the military up to grab out of the courthouse. We've got them with the Saudis, everything. They are shut down, man. They are in disarray right now. So the good news is they're not blaming us right now for this.
Mm-hmm.
That is the good news.
And again, they just want to like just keep throwing distractions out and say, please don't look at any other photos that are out there, i.e. InfoWars.com. Janet Napolitano is in Congress. Do not look at Drudge, mm-hmm. who's carrying our stuff. We are engaging the globalists at point blank range right now.
Yep. Thank you, Alex. All right, so, Alex, you're doing the show tonight, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there you go. Alex Jones, 7 p.m. Central, InfoWars Nightly News.
Alex reneges on that booking a little bit later and says, Jakari, you're hosting tonight.
Yeah.
That's a
lot of work.
Alex leaves, and then about like a minute, 2 minutes, a little bit later, he barges back in.
Just watched the senator questioning
Napolitano. Yeah.
Hey guys, keep going. Get Madondi on. He's calling. Madondi.
Okay. All right.
Is he guys in front of him. Guys on him.
Okay. Adam, just
hang on. We got to get Dan Bedondi.
Stay right there, Adam. Tell us when you have Dan on the line. So we have Dan Bedondi. He was at the press conference. If you didn't see him, you definitely heard him.
By the way, the viewers, we're overwhelmed. We can't upload all this to YouTube. Listeners, you clip all this out. Put the juicy clips on YouTube. We'll put them on InfoWars.com. We need everybody's help. This is War Room, baby.
Yep.
InfoWars is shutting their ass down.
Alex Jones is very... All right, there's Dan Bedondi. All right, Dan.
Oh, this is a mess.
Wow.
Yeah. This is a mess.
That is.
Hey guys, I can't be bothered to cut clips. Don't you have a staff? What's going on?
Wow.
I need all of you to do my work for me and then I'll repost it.
That's just crazy.
So they get to talking to Dan Bedondi and his big thing is that he was mobbed at the press conference, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, Dan, so you start asking your questions. Now, were you surrounded? Were you mobbed by the FBI guys?
Oh, yeah. They come right up to me like a bunch of Gestapos. I told them, I'm not afraid of you criminals.
So about how many...
They could use a skin attack against the...
Yeah, Dan, about how many people do you think there were that surrounded you?
I should say everybody up in the front. I mean, you should be able to see it on the news. I was just too excited at the time. And it's crazy over here. I mean, we got cops there. We got Albert over here. So I got two guys that are running video cameras now the whole time. And hopefully we can make it safely out of Boston.
Hopefully I can make it safely out of Boston.
He's like reporting like he's in a fucking war zone and not just at a very calm press conference.
The only intensity of it really was the gravity of the situation himself.
Yeah.
Those are the only thing. And like, obviously, I don't think that anyone cares about his bullshit.
No.
Like, we have these other pictures at InfoWars.com. That's what he was yelling during his question. I don't think they care. Like, I don't think the FBI gives a shit if people are looking at these pictures and, speculating about them online. They care about the tip line. They care about the actual investigation that they're carrying out, and they know that, like, if people are trying to give them tips about the CST guys, it's a waste of fucking time, and they're not interested in that. That's a distraction. But if you know who these two suspects are, we need your help with that. We haven't identified them. I think that they're easily taking that and misrepresenting it as the media and the FBI and the DHS don't want you looking at our shit.
Yeah.
Whereas they don't care. Leave them alone about that shit.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah, it is one of those situations where those press conferences and all the fucking, like, we've talked about the names for shit that the UN has and all that stuff. They need a consultant to be like, oh, here's the language that if you use this, they're going to twist it against you. Like, here's what you want to say, all right? Don't focus on the other photographs, all right? I understand why you would want to put it that way, because I hear words and they make sense to me.
Right.
But what you need to say is, we would like tips on these people.
Right.
Or, don't use the negative reinforcement whatsoever. Or, otherwise, they'll be like, ah, blah, blah, blah.
Or say... have fun with your piddly bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Be dismissive and insulting to,
enjoy.
Yeah.
We would love that, but just don't call us.
Why don't you go read articles from days ago explaining who those dudes are that you're so suspicious of Navy SEALs and shit.
Hey, you're the one always arguing that they need to have a certain level of professionalism and I need a separate yell of obvious shit.
I understand that. I'm not seriously suggesting this. I'm talking about maybe what would be fun to see in a movie.
Yes.
As opposed to what would function in the real world.
Right.
Like, because I would rather this FBI guy just give him the DX suck it. Hey, why don't you go fuck yourself, asshole? But obviously that isn't sustainable in the real world.
No, probably not.
So Bedondi here now gets into talking about how he destroyed that press conference with truth. And then Alex suggests a dangerous plan of action.
Oh, absolutely. I showed them the photographs, and then notice, right, when I presented the photographs, notice how the clown in back of me put up his clipboard to block my photographs from the cameras.
Really?
And they didn't want these photos to be shown. They shut the entire press conference down because I exposed the truth of what's going on.
Okay, Dan, can you think of anybody in particular? Did you notice any particular affiliate or anybody you talked to?
Devastating victory. Devastating. Everybody should join him at the next press conference. All real media, converge on Boston. Defeat the terrorist.
All right, Alex.
He's trying to get people to go to Boston to disrupt and harass people.
Yep.
This is exactly the same sort of behavior he's being sued about for Sandy Hook stuff. And you see it's very clearly in his repertoire of actions.
Yeah.
Everyone, all quote-unquote real media, needs to converge on Boston and defeat the terrorists.
Yeah.
God damn.
Cut to that backfiring and people taking him literally and Dan Bondi getting wrecked.
And Alex having to pretend that Dan Bondi never worked for him.
Oh, he's no.
Alex is celebrating him like a returning hero on this episode. I'm so glad I hired you.
Yeah.
So Alex gets into that white patsy. Like, it's obviously they're not going with him. He's probably already dead.
They don't want the white redneck patsies. They probably already executed out there.
They don't want
the Navy SEALs. They are scared. I'm telling you, folks, you get these articles out that are at InfoWars.com. This is coffin nails to the tyranny. Go ahead, Dan.
And if you notice on the TV, Alex, when I was doing this, the looks on these criminals' faces, they jumped off that stage like, oh, my God, we just got exposed to the world.
They didn't. And they're trying to present this idea that, like, you know, they're so scared of him coming in with this.
Yeah.
I think they're disgusted. I think it's more like yelling stupid shit. He's being super disruptive. I don't know how you react to that in a professional manner other than exactly what people did. Like, they're asking, like, he's yelling, is this a false flag? And the answer, no. Next question.
Yeah.
You just try and accommodate as best as you can, but also feel, like, sickened that someone is acting like this.
Right.
Like, because everybody who's engaged with the real world understands that there's a tragedy and there's people on the loose that these people are working really hard to try and find.
Right.
Now you have someone just making a show out of it. It's disgusting. It's counter to the interests of the community, quite frankly.
God damn it. That's such a good distillation of our president.
So they try and go back to Dan Bondi. They finish the talking to him and then they realize that he's still on the line. And so they try to go back to him. And here is where we get a cameo, very unexpected cameo from someone.
Richard Belzer.
Okay. I'm sorry. Rob, hang right there. We have Dan Bondi back. Dan, go ahead. Hello, Dan. Can you hear me? I can't hear him.
Hey, Dan, are you there?
You're talking to Alex's wife, not Dan Bondi. You're on the wrong line.
I'm sorry, this is Dan's wife? Oh,
okay.
Does she want to talk to us?
That was Kelly.
That was
Alex's ex-wife now. Yeah. And they are months away from a divorce. And you can kind of hear it in her voice.
She does
not seem happy at all.
Uh-uh.
I do not know what's going on there in that dynamic, but that was fucked up. Probably telling Alex to calm down his bullshit.
Yeah, that suggests
maybe.
On the other line.
Yes.
So they accidentally clicked over to the wrong line. So she was talking to Alex on the work phone.
Yes.
And they clicked over
they had to
her. Yeah, that's the only way that could have happened.
Yeah, she called into InfoWars to probably be, I don't know what, but she does not sound happy there.
No.
That's the only time I think I've ever heard her on the show.
Yeah.
Is popping in accidentally
there. This is Alex's wife. You're on the wrong line.
It doesn't even sound that like that's annoyed.
Yeah.
She seems mad.
Yeah. Well, that's possible.
There's a tone of I don't want to talk to you.
There is a tone of a bit like this means Alex put me on fucking hold, doesn't it?
Yeah, must be. Yeah. Doesn't seem good.
Nope.
So they continued encouraging people to go to Boston, and at this point Alex gets very celebratory about a particular thing.
Go to Boston right now if you're listening.
Yes.
Get out of your basement, get away from your computer and go to Boston and start getting in the face of people and starting to ask people questions.
Yeah.
By the way, InfoWars is getting double the traffic it's ever gotten. We broke the record a few days ago. Now it's double that. Right now, smoke is coming out of the servers and fire. And Watson just went up with the deal of FBI ignores men with backpacks, but that's not even the issue. It's a great headline by Watson working around the clock. It's like midnight where he's at.
Yeah.
It's even worse than that. This is the FBI saying, never mind all the real suspects, because it's their people. We have them.
No, you don't. Those are civil support team members that are very easily explained. The FBI knows who they are. They're not ignoring the real suspects. You're just full of shit chasing fantasies. And it works. Alex is recognizing how fucking lucrative this is.
Yeah.
And what he's doing is maybe not illegal. Why don't we do this more?
Yep.
It's crazy. You could see the glee that he's expressing about, like, our traffic. The servers are smoking.
Right.
So many people are coming in. We need to do Google bombs to get false flag out there so people will be led to the site. Oh my God, it's all happening.
Yeah. I think you should also, I also should have added into the, Alex's ex-wife, tone of voices that she was talking to a clearly drunk Alex as well.
Most likely drunk Alex.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very likely drunk Alex.
So
yeah.
I would describe this next clip as self-parody because it begins with David and Jakari trying to express how sincere the interests of InfoWars are. Like, they're into the truth, right?
Sure.
And then Alex immediately invalidates that.
We're more interested in the truth than we are about position.
By the way, Dan, you getting InfoWars.com out on every network?
Yep.
I said double the traffic. That was earlier, the report. It's like 50 times the traffic. We're getting a million visitors every couple minutes right now.
Are you serious?
No. It's 100,000K new people every 60 seconds.
Wow.
Now, the IT guys have never, this is probably like the number one website in the world just during this window.
Wow.
It is 100,000K new joining who's already on it. This isn't hits. These are visitors every minute.
Wow.
I mean, we're watching the New World Order burn down.
David Knight says, we are more interested in truth than position. Then immediately Alex barges in bragging about how many hits they're getting.
That's too,
we're the number one news site in the world.
That's too... What we're more interested in is the truth. Hey, everybody, we're getting so many people, we're going to put a counter up on the board. All right, there's one, there's two, there's three, there's four.
It's...
Jesus Christ, that's too bad.
It's parody. It's self-parody.
That's too bad.
So they go to the calls and want to get some listeners' takes on what the press conference, you know, what their feeling about it was. And this first guy has a shit take on it.
And I also wanted to say that, you know, to me, this whole news conference was about one thing. It wasn't about them saying, you know, we're investigating. This was a direct shot at Alex Jones at InfoWars.com because you notice as soon as Badandi mentioned InfoWars, they immediately shut him down.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about we're not going to have anybody looking, nobody should look at any other photos. Why? Because yesterday, everything Alex had out about the photos of the seals, et cetera, I really believe that's the main reason they put this out.
Yeah, I mean, this whole press conference really wasn't about getting these suspects' photos. It was an attack on InfoWars.
Yep.
This is parasitic levels of narcissism. Like, it's crazy. These people are narcissistic for Alex.
Yeah.
On Alex's behalf. Imagining that this entire city, all the FBI, all of the people trying to solve this, this crime. Nah. They're really just trying to discredit Alex.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, man.
That is such a way to inflate your own self-importance is by hitching your wagon to somebody who you think is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's such...
Well, it's narcissism by proxy.
Yeah. That's fucked up.
So here's another stupid-ass caller.
Now, here's the thing. The FBI trying to take control of the narrative.
Huh?
Look, all you have to do is call them and yell at them. Tell them. What are you doing trying to control this narrative and trying to tell me that my eyes, see, I am the real Homeland Security. So are you, and so
what?
Is everybody else out there. They don't control anything. And I'm so sick of them trying to control the narrative.
Yeah.
This is bullcrap. We can solve this.
We can solve this. He said control the narrative three times.
Somebody lock that man inside his house and don't let him outside.
He probably doesn't get out that much to begin with.
That's probably true.
So now Alex barges into studio because he is going to try and bully Leanne McAdoo into coming on air because Leanne has cracked the case and figured out why these two, the photos of the suspects can't be the real suspects. She's cracked the case.
Leanne's got it covered. All right.
It's more looking about the Sandy Hook, which is a false flag.
Hold on, put him on hold.
I'm sorry.
Let's get Leanne McAdoo in here. Leanne, come on.
No.
No, Leanne, you get in here and make your point. Gray backpack, folks. She's right. It's not black. It's gray. Go ahead and tell people.
It's a gray a backpack, right? I mean,
did she get a round of applause?
No, you're right.
I saw
here. You can look at
the
that.
The guy's got a gray backpack. Those were black backpacks. So this rabbit trail doesn't even fit the script.
We have some new information there.
No.
No, this is War Room. Hey, want to get a seat and come in here and air?
Hold on. I'm going to say this because I've been telling her this all week, and David, you can attest to this. I told Leanne, if you don't come in here and just briefly do, you know, just a quick report or just say something, Alex Jones is going to find you in the hall, drag you in here, and make you get on. Did I not? I've been saying that all week.
Okay. Well,
hold on. Let's get her a chair.
Now you're in it. This is Leanne McAdoo, one of our new reporters here in the InfoWars. She will be joining us.
Welcome aboard, Leanne. So the problem with Leanne's thinking here is that there was only one picture that was made public of an exploded backpack, and it did appear to be a darker, most likely black backpack. When the FBI released the images of the suspects, who we would soon come to know as Tamerlan and Jokhar Sarnev, it appeared that the bag that Jokhar was wearing was lighter in color, possibly gray. At no point had it been established that the pictured exploded backpack was Jokhar's. Nor had it ever been established that the brothers were carrying identical bags. The photograph bag could easily have been the one Tamerlan was carrying, and Jokhar could have been had a lighter bag. There's literally no contradiction here. But because InfoWars is so insistent on coming out with spin, and as they keep saying, controlling the narrative, anything that they think could be used to plant doubt is worth reporting. Beyond that, one still photograph of a post-explosion backpack is not enough to conduct a forensic investigation on. Alex and his crew have no idea what effect the explosion could have had on the color of the backpack, which isn't to say that I definitely think that it could have turned a gray backpack black, just that they have no goddamn idea what they're talking about. This isn't the behavior of journalists. This is more what you'd expect to hear from idiots smoking weed trying to blow each other's minds. Sensational and intriguing if you're slightly impaired, but utterly without substance.
Yeah.
Poor first showing, Leanne. Really sucks that your first appearance on the show was spouting half-cooked bullshit to help Alex profit off lying about a national tragedy. Unlike these other people on the show, I know what Leanne was doing before she joined InfoWars. I'm certain that this is just a gig for her. I know that she used to be a New Age hippie, blogging about, quote, being deeply drawn to reconnect with Source as the Mayan calendar ended in 2012, which is shockingly close to when she won Alex's Find a Reporter contest. I know that she'd entered another TV hosting contest, the CW Austin Star, in 2011, and she'd been on a TV show prior to that called The Last Resorts. I'm willing to believe that she may not have known what she was getting into when she started at InfoWars, but if you're a bohemian free spirit out there practicing tarot one day, and the next, you're doing this shit and not immediately quitting when you see Alex behaving how he has on air since the bombing, I guess all I can say is I fucking hope that job paid super well. Because you're doing this, and you don't believe this.
Nope.
This is an act.
Man.
I feel bad. I feel bad, maybe not for her later.
Right.
But here, in April 2013, if you're just joining in...
Bye.
Yeah. I mean, you immediately invalidate any empathy I have for you by like, aha, gray backpack.
Right.
And I know that Alex is forcing her on air and she'd rather not, but still, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I remember my family had a blue minivan, and then we left, and when we came back, there was this... just pile of black ash.
Mm-hmm.
And so we assumed that the minivan had been stolen, of course. It definitely wasn't on fire.
Makes sense.
It because our minivan was blue, Dan.
Right.
It was a blue minivan. It wasn't a gray one made of ash.
Right.
Duh.
It makes sense. And I would feel just as bad about, or mad and directed this way at, like, any of these people, if I knew, like, let's say if I knew that right before Rob Dew joined InfoWars, he was out there writing about crystals.
Yeah.
Or if he was, like, a left-wing activist.
Right.
Or something like that. If I knew those elements of these people's prior lives, I would be just as insistent that, like, you are acting. You're doing this, causing the damage that you're doing, and spreading this propaganda, and you don't even believe in it. I'm not sure which is worse. You know, like actually believing it or doing it for a check. But I think doing it for a check is less acceptable to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, believing in crystals and tarot and shit and not doing it for a check, that seems bad to me. That's no good.
I don't know. I just think these people can go fuck themselves.
Absolutely.
So anyway, we have one last clip here, and it's that caller who got interrupted by Alex barging in to bring Leanne into the studio. He was trying to spin a Sandy Hook conspiracy.
Oh, good. Now's the time for it.
Certainly. And so they get back to him, and he's still trying to spin this conspiracy, and it just doesn't work.
I thought you'd like to know that.
I'm sorry. Could you did you get that, Jacari?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We had a little technical difficulty. Can you repeat?
I'm sorry, Andrew. We had to put you on hold. We have like
10 people talking in here at the same time.
This is bullshit.
That's unreal.
It's great that he has like 100 times the traffic or whatever, so people can hear great radio like that. Like 100 people in a fucking room.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
What is this, a Coach Dave show?
So Alex is full of this narcissism because he thinks he's right about all of these things. He thinks he scooped the media. He thinks that even the release of the FBI pictures of the suspects are evidence that he's right. And he's being profited handsomely for it. You know, he's getting exactly what he wants, which is way more attention. And that's probably a bad sign. On the night of April 18th, Tamerlan and Jokhar Sarnaev realized that they had been caught. As soon as the FBI released pictures of them, you know, that's when they figured it out.
Well, yeah.
Up till that point, they
weren't... Oh, no, they know it's us.
Up to that point, they weren't getting any suspicion thrown their way online from all of these blogs that were researching and finding suspects. The authorities had been tight-lipped about the leads they were pursuing, and if you were them, you might get the sense that you'd gotten away with it. And from all accounts, that's pretty much what they thought. They'd gone back to their normal lives and thought, hey, maybe we pulled this off. And then that press conference happened, and it all got disrupted, and they panicked. The FBI press conference was at about 5 p.m., and at 10:31 p.m., the brothers approached the vehicle of an MIT police officer named Sean Collier, who they then killed, most likely because they only had one gun and there were two of them. At 11:26 p.m., they carjacked an SUV in Boston. The driver of that car managed to escape, and he called 911 at 12:19 a.m. He goes on to tell the police that the two men who carjacked him told him that they bombed the Boston Marathon and that his car was equipped with GPS. So the police turned on that GPS and began to track their car. At 12:41, the police located the SUV in Watertown, along with a sedan that was being driven by the two brothers, and it's called in. The reporting officer is told not to approach until more units arrive, so he follows them. After a brief drive, the driver of the SUV gets out, and he approaches the police car firing a gun. At approximately the same time, the police supervisor's unit shows up, and someone else comes out of the sedan throwing homemade bombs at the police. There's a brief firefight, and at 12:49 p.m., the man with the gun, who turns out to be Tamerlan, is tackled by a cop, whereupon he's run over by his younger brother, who is attempting to flee. Tamerlan is put in an ambulance and taken to the hospital, where he is pronounced dead at 1:06 a.m., despite attempts at resuscitation. But Jokhar got away. He abandoned his car about a half mile away and fled on foot. The night was absolute chaos, and when it was all said and done, one suspect was dead, along with Sean Collier, the MIT officer. Additionally, Officer Dennis D.J. Simmons suffered injuries in the Watertown firefight that would go on to take his life a year later in April 2014. He's officially recognized as the fifth victim of the bombing, and though much of Boston remembers him as a hero, he's all too often forgotten in this story. In particular, his family was pretty upset that the Mark Wahlberg movie Patriots Day seemed to not even be aware of him, even though there is a memorial loop of the other victims of that attack in the movie. It's hard not to see that being a race thing, but that might also be partially because it's a Mark Wahlberg movie. The entire situation changed overnight. Now the surviving perpetrator knows that the police know who he is, and that they're looking for him. But he doesn't know if his brother is dead or if he's being interrogated at that time. Now the police know that these suspects are absolutely willing to murder police, and one of them is on the loose and armed, at least with a gun and possibly with even more IEDs. The city that was previously on edge with an absence of information now has come to the crest and finds itself with a whole lot of information, and it's fucking scary information. No one knows where Jokhar went. How does Alex respond to all this? That's what we'll learn on our next installment, where we'll also get to learn a little bit more about these brothers. I suspect it's going to be a gigantic mess.
Yeah.
And Alex...
I'm not looking forward to it.
I can't even imagine what he's going to end up doing with this.
Really not looking forward to it.
If he's gone this crazy with the situation we've had so far, when there's a firefight, a killed cop, one of the suspects is dead, overnight. I just can't even imagine how irresponsible the 19th is going to be.
No, this is going to be a shit show.
Yep. So look forward to that.
Yay! Hooray!
Oh, God. You know what? It's just like you just think, hey, the day of the bombing, that's going to be the most awful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then each passing day is just new levels of terrible behavior on his part. It's all new lows.
Yeah.
It's constantly new lows.
It's a spiral down the toilet bowl of sanity that is, even without retrospect, because obviously it's easy to look back and be like, but even during that time, it is unconscionable what he's done.
Yes.
It is just unconscionable. And how many people flocked to just the simplest possible explanation from the dumbest possible man in order to assuage their dumb fear. Or their very rational fear. Apologies. Yeah. The rational fear is what leads to
the
being
unsatisfied
the
fear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just like, that's a fucking microcosm.
And then all the people who flocked probably because it's a more interesting story and saw it as entertainment and then maybe got sucked in.
Yeah.
Or even if they didn't get sucked in, still helped profit Alex and his operation.
Yeah.
It's really tragic to think about. And,
It is like from these 2 days, you can extrapolate the end of humanity. Like, you see exactly how we're going to go. Maybe not now.
It does pretend.
Maybe not now. Maybe not soon. But that is exactly how we're all going to die. That's how it's going to go down.
It all really helps make sense of his later trajectory.
Yeah, it really does.
This attention-seeking behavior, this desperation to be seen as on the right side, the winning team, appearances of destroying the globalists. Like, it kind of does put into perspective a lot of, like, the Trump flip.
Yeah, and not just that, but like, this is him almost making that turn of like, finally I'm actually right. Like, this is that, like, that insistence that they are not giving me credit for being right, that's that belief that, holy shit, me of all people,
finally the pieces are in place for me to present myself as right.
I think that's in that day, I really do think he believes that he's nailed it.
I think it's possible. I think it's an argument you can make. I'm less certain as someone who doesn't trust him at all.
For sure.
And
for
I also think that his mind is such a just a spider's nest. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just some deep, scary thing that's mysterious.
I see it exactly like The Road. You know, like Cormac McCarthy wrote Alex Jones's brain.
It's something that is it's hard to decipher. You know, you don't really, you think you understand what's going on, but it may be something entirely different.
Mm.
I'm reticent to say that he actually believes what he's saying, or if he wasn't getting a ton of traffic off this, I think you could make that argument much easier.
Right, right.
The fact that
he's
giddily celebrating all of this traffic and recognizing, like, ha ha, we're on top.
Right.
Like, that really makes it difficult for me to believe that he definitely believes this, because that's the ulterior motive that we know he chases.
No, I've got the absolute correct explanation for this. Alex is possessed by the devil.
He would say that.
I know.
And
that's exactly what the devil would say, Dan.
If he saw someone behaving like this, he would certainly accuse them of being...
I rest my case.
Or it could just be his subconscious.
Could be.
Or the devil.
Or it could be God.
Any of the three. Who knows?
Maybe they're all the same.
Maybe. Anyway, we'll be back.
Indeed.
But until next time, we got a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We got we're on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBed. This has been a long one.
Yeah. Also, we're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. And if you would like to listen to the show, please go to iTunes or wherever podcastual applications you use to download the show. Please leave a review. Do all that stuff. Tell your friends. We'd love it.
Yeah, and we'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I reside at 666 Boylston.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.